Good evening, brothers and sisters of the Leaf. Coming to you live from Bubba the Love Sponge's dimly lit bedroom, it's the Tuesday Night Cigar Club Podcast. Let me tell you something, brother. Tonight, the boys say their prayers and take their vitamins as they discuss all things Hulk Hogan. Starting off the conversation with his 2016 sex tape scandal, and then pile-driving their way straight into his 1989 celluloid wrestling extravaganza, No Holds Barred. And by prayers and vitamins, of course. I mean, cigars and booze. Let's remember who we're talking about here, folks. Tonight, our crew of lovable jabronis smoke the smooth and flavorful La Gloria Cubana Serie RF number 21 cigar, while body-slamming pint after deliciously hoppy pint of the Arrogant Bastard Bourbon Barrel Aged Ale from Stone Brewing Company. Gotta love that. Assonance and alliteration in one name for a beer. Arrogant Bastard Bourbon Barrel Aged Ale. Nice. From Stone Brewing Company. It sounds like the guys are going to have more fun tonight than Trish Stratus's wrestling trunks. Hubba hubba. So sit back, light 'em up, and enjoy the show.
Wow, who'd have thought, boys, this far into it, that it would take a sex tape to get us to review a Hulk Hogan movie? It's weird, right?
How many has he had?
Sex tapes? I don't know. That's his business.
How many movies? How many Hulk Hogan movies?
Well, there's Suburban Commando. And
oh, I forgot about that one.
We're doing No Holds Barred tonight.
Yeah, brother.
You guys ever make a sex tape?
Let me tell you this.
No.
You guys?
Seems like a lot of work. I'm incredibly lazy.
You are lazy.
Much like the Hulkster, there's a legal issue involved with mine, so I can't really go into it.
Okay. Laziness, pleading the fifth.
Oh, I can't do that anymore.
Toto answered no really quickly. The guy with all the camera equipment.
He's got a stack of tapes, like, waist high.
You can't prove anything, brother. I've been making sex tapes since sex tapes were first cool.
Kim Kardashian did that on me, where Billy Baldwin's character has, like, the whole closet full. He's, like, every chick he's ever dated.
Oh, Sliver, wasn't it?
Was that it?
Yeah, Sliver.
No, it was Flatliners was the one where his character... In Sliver, he's recording stuff, but in Flatliners, the character had, like, taped every girl he'd ever slept with.
I never saw either movie.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right.
I think I saw Sliver.
I don't know anything about that.
Let me ask you this. Do you, when a celebrity sex tape gets leaked and it's, like, in the news, do you go online and try to take a look at it?
I honestly do not.
Nah, not really.
Not really that interesting, yeah. No.
You prefer your porn done by professionals, both in front of and behind the camera?
I just think it's a shameless plea for brand attention.
Well, I guess in general what I'm asking is, do you, as a watcher of pornography, do you favor professionally well-produced, or do you go to, like, the homemade, amateur, leak, you know, sex?
Unfortunately, I'm inadequate to answer this question.
I figured that'd be the safe answer everybody would give.
I can't answer that question, and the answer is little A, little B.
Yeah, mix variety, spice love, right? What about you?
Doesn't really matter.
Whatever comes up first.
That's right. But I definitely don't go looking for a celebrity just because they... Oh, I got a sex tape. Right. Oh, I'm naked on camera, and it's not supposed to be seen by the whole world. Yes. Yet I somehow posted it to the internet.
And my publicist linked it.
Yeah, I guess... Yeah, I mean, that's what started my train of thought. But then I was just wondering... You know, porn's one of those weird things where you certainly don't talk about it with the boys or with your friends. You know, according to what you read online, everybody watches it, but it very rarely comes up in conversation.
Well, we talk about
I saw this great porn today.
No, we talk about it all the time in terms of our hits and our numbers to our pages. I mean, we want to make sure that, you know, we're getting brand recognition out there. Oh, wait. What?
You're on the wrong podcast. That's your Friday night podcast.
Oh.
That's the doctor and the professor.
All right. I get freaked out watching, like, amateur homemade porn. You know what gets me? And I don't, not that I, you know, soak in so much, but whenever, like, a random pet will show up, like, if people getting busy and, like, a dog will be in the corner, like, sleeping or, like, just watching, or, like, they'll be in the middle doing it and a cat will jump up on the bed. Like,
I'm too used to it.
That freaks me out, like, big time. All I can focus on is that pet and, like... wondering, like, does it know what's going on? Obviously not. It's just kind of chilling. It's weird.
Yes, weird.
Cats and dogs are weird creatures. That's where I'm going
so
with
Hulk
this.
Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. Anyway.
So Hulk Hogan's sitting at the edge of the bed just waiting for y'all to be done.
A cat's over there just licking its paws, watching. You know, this is probably, I can tell, this is something much better addressed with my therapist than, why am I so freaked out by cats and homemade porn? Why, damn it?
Matt or Cade, this again? Again.
And again, the cats Facebook group that we promote is not to feature random cats that show up in amateur porno tapes.
Well.
Although that in itself could become a niche. Submit your best pornos.
How do you know that's amateur? That cat could have agents.
Hey, good point.
That cat could also have feline AIDS. Google it.
Google it. I'm just saying, you know, Rin Tin Tin had to have somebody book his gigs.
Was he a cat?
Dog.
No, dog. Dog. Boy, this is going to be an interesting one. Welcome, everybody, to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club.
All I know is after this day, I just took my first sip.
You know, there's
beer,
been a lot of weird things today. Yeah. I had a semi-truck full of live ammunition explode on the highway down the street from me.
I got caught up in the traffic jam of that.
I was driving it. had a few cocktails. That's their fault.
It's 8:30 in the morning.
But no, welcome, everybody. It is episode 30.
Episode 30.
Can you believe that?
All right.
We have been doing this for 3 decades.
This. Yes.
We've only done one show a year.
That's not how we tell time here.
Sorry, I'm still picturing that dog looking at me in the corner of that point. And every once in a while, they'll yawn. And it's like, all right.
Is so that they, a performance
they,
issue?
They definitely know that they're not. They don't know what's going on. They think it's wrestling.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Speaking of wrestling, I've got a big wrestling show for you tonight. We were all going to wear unitards and
rip them off of our physique.
They didn't have any at the store that could suitably hold our svelte muscular physiques.
Our girth.
I had the same problem finding a wrestling speedo that was going to be able to contain my wang.
Yada yada, the Tuesday Night Cigar Club is no longer welcome in any Academy Sports and Outdoors in the greater Central Texas area.
Or Spencer's Gifts.
Well, that was justified.
I've been out there for a while.
That was justified.
Frankly, I was surprised to see they'd reopen the store in Louisville.
Right? They are back.
They are back.
Especially after that lawsuit.
Again, that tape, it's all one big thing.
I didn't even know a human being.
My defendants have gotten together and just filed one large class action suit against me.
You know, a grown man could do that with a whoopee cushion.
Hey, Cade. Everybody dies, but not everybody really lives, man.
Let me tell you something, brother. Not everybody lives.
Oh, God, we're going to be hearing some brothers tonight.
No, we're not, because there was hardly no...
He actually did not, Hulkster did not use brother a lot in tonight's movie. That was his one thing he didn't do that was otherwise...
He didn't say a whole lot in general.
No, he didn't. We'll get to that. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. I'm going to get right into things, because, boy, this is a real movie we got tonight. Tonight we are going to be smoking La Gloria Cubana Siri RF number 21. These were submitted to us by Famous Smoke Shop. It is an exclusive for Famous Smoke Shop. Obviously, the La Gloria Cubana line is not exclusive. They've been around forever.
Yeah. I've seen them in the brick and mortars all the time.
Oh, they're everywhere. And I enjoyed the last exclusive they did. The Gilded Age was an Oscuro cigar, which I enjoyed quite a bit. These come to us from the Dominican Republic. They have a natural wrapper. It's an Ecuadorian Habano wrapper. From the Famous Smoke Shop website, we get this description. Siri RF represents La Gloria Cubana's best tobaccos. Blended in perfect proportion, this LGC is a straight-up, medium-bodied mix of Dominican and Nicaraguan long fillers, rich in sweet and spicy tastes, that go next level by adding a perfectly measured dose of Lajeros from both countries. A Connecticut Habano binder and an Ecuadorian Habano wrapper finish the job. It begs to be matched with a refined scotch or bourbon.
Do we have any refined scotch or bourbon?
No, but speaking of bourbon, that does lead us to this evening's beer, which we'll talk about here in a sec. These are Toros we're going to be smoking. It's a 6x50. I will reserve giving price information until we've all smoked them up, as Tuttle likes to guess.
Yeah, please do.
It's a little fun game we do. It's a really pretty, I will say this, it's a very pretty cigar. A darker natural wrapper. I like the band, the yellow and the red and the black really pop. It's got the classic La Gloria Cubana logo there, but the inclusion of the yellow and the red and black. It's a good looking band. And since we are not up to matching it with a refined scotch or bourbon, we are going with a bourbon barrel aged ale. Tut, you went beer shopping last night. We're trying to find a beer to match with this wrestling movie we're doing tonight. And we almost went with a Lucha Libre. Had a Mexican wrestler mask on it. It's called El Super B.
El Super B.
Did you ever hear that one yet?
No.
It was from Four Corners Brewery here in Texas. But it sounded, the descriptions Tut had sound a lot like the Donde Dude.
The Donde Dude, yeah.
A lot of honey and a lot of mix. And
it's kind of like more towards the wheat or the wit. I kind of figured that you guys would probably...
Well, I mean, it also didn't sound like it might pair as good with this.
Way too all over. It was kind of way too scatterbrained for the cigar.
It when he came across the Arrogant Bastard and threw that out there, which I'll go ahead and beat you guys to it. It's not named after me.
Are you sure?
I knew you were going.
I thought you were calling me a name when you said when we came across Arrogant Bastard, and I was like, come on, man.
No. But yes, tonight we are drinking the Arrogant Bastard.
Not arrogant.
Barrel-aged ale. Tell us about it, Yagboy. Educate us.
Well, first off, you said Arrogant Bastard, not Bourbon Barrel Arrogant Bastard.
Oh, it is aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels.
Correct. But you just told me to look up Arrogant Bastard.
Oh, that's the thing. There's so many of these.
Yes, there are.
I'm sorry.
But no, that's all right. They are all very similar in one another. The original Arrogant Bastard coming from Stone Brewing Company out of California, Escondido, if I pronounce that correctly, has been in... since 1996, it was founded, and it is now, I think, one of the largest craft brewers. It's the largest craft brewer in California, and I think it's like 10th or something like that in the nation.
Yeah,
in terms of,
is this bigger than Sierra Nevada?
No.
I don't know. I would have to double check.
In California, but Sierra Nevada is in California.
Oh, yeah, no, it's they're bigger than that.
Wow, I didn't know that. I thought Sierra Nevada was kind of...
Wait, no, it is. Sierra Nevada's big, but I mean...
I thought it was in Nevada.
Welcome, Doctor.
Good evening, fellas. Good to be back, as always. Yeah. Good to see everyone. No, I've liked the Arrogant Bastard ever since I first kind of stumbled upon it.
It is good.
Yes.
Now, this is actually aged in old bourbon barrels?
Yes. People have, the different craft breweries have started to, you know, differentiate themselves, and a lot of them have started by aging beer in bourbon barrels to give it that little bit of
smokiness.
That, I mean, you got to drink one really to get it to so that you can really pick up that differentiation just between saying it's not bourbon and it's not beer, but it's got, you know, it brings together both those flavors for that beer, so that you, and I don't know, it's hard to describe for myself when I think about it, but I do love them. I mean, everyone that I've had thus far from different brewers, I mean, they all are a little bit different.
See, I'm real hit or miss with the barrel ages.
Yeah,
I've had like this one. I don't mind it. I actually like just the regular Arrogant Bastard a little better, but I still like this. Like I said, when I took a first sip today, after today, I was just like, oh,
I have not
that's
had
good.
I've had a lot, and I've had the Double Bastard,
mm-hmm.
Which is a real strong one.
Yes.
What's the ABV on that? Like 12 or?
close to it. The ABV on this is 8.1. Arrogant Bastard itself is 7.2. But yeah, now
it's the only one I've had.
Coming out of California, this is a strong ale, and it's not really listed as an IPA. But of course, the hops are just overboard. That's one of the things that Stone does not actively put out there is what is the IBU. So on all of their Arrogant Bastards, nobody really knows.
Yeah.
Unless they're gonna, basically do an independent test. Most people say they're usually like at 100.
That kind of makes them an arrogant bastard for not putting their IBUs up.
Yes, it does.
We don't need to give you your IBU information.
I was wondering what else we could age in bourbon barrels.
Where do they get the bourbon barrels?
Socks?
I'm assuming from distilleries,
bacon.
But...
Yeah.
It must take a lot of bourbon barrels to age.
Bourbon-aged socks.
Yeah, most of the bourbon barrels only get used, a couple times at most. Nice. And then
just get soggy and.
Well, no, they. It's just that.
They start coming apart.
Yeah, because they char the inside of the barrel and then put the whiskey in. When it comes out, they like I said, most can maybe get only a few barrels. I mean, they're not just constantly reusing these things. The barrels get used very few times, and then they basically get sold off.
Set into the beer companies, and there you go.
Yeah, beer companies, obviously the Scotch.
And now cigars. We're seeing it with more.
Yeah.
Drew Estate is doing their Kentucky Fire Cure. I think the Pappy Van Winkle does some. And the Lesha Black Series. A lot of... bourbon has never been bigger, has it?
No.
Everybody's catching up to us.
Thanks, hipsters.
We're pioneers, boys.
That's right. That's something my liver can feel good about.
Also, y'all kind of bourbon aged.
Yeah, our livers are barrel bourbon aged.
I'm barrel bourbon aged.
You smell it. The first few sips, I really like it, and I honestly I'm trying to discern. I'm not getting any. I'm not going to taste bourbon, but it does have a smokiness.
That smokiness
that's
too.
Not there with the regular. Arrogant Bastard.
Yeah, I think that's coming from the charred part of it.
Everybody lit up your cigars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How, first impressions?
I'm getting a nice little kick out of it from the start.
Yeah, it's got a little spice to it. It's a very light draw. I'm liking the draw a lot. Mm-hmm. When we're taking pictures, and you lit up, the aroma on it was really pretty. It was a very, very
It smells
nice,
good. It's a good smelling
good
smell.
Tobacco smoke.
So far, just lit up, but I did get that blast is maybe hyperbole. I got a nice, medium spice, nothing crazy.
Yeah, it's not really whipping around on you.
Immediately settled down to a really nice kind of tobacco, maybe a little bit of coffee. It was good. So far, so good. And I think it might go well with the spirits.
Yeah.
Doctor?
It's far too early to tell, but the early returns are promising.
I'm excited. I'm kind of interested. I'm kind of interested on smoking this because I see this all the time in my brick and mortar, and I always want to pick one up to try it, but I've never done it.
They
I've
have another one, the Siri N,
passed it.
The dark. I think it's an Oscuro also.
Yeah,
it's really, really good. But I haven't smoked one in a long time, so this will be good. Okay, so that's what we're drinking. That's what we're smoking. Before we get in the movie, this is a pretty topical. We don't really do topical shows that tie into the news, but this is a pretty topical show.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan's been in the mainstream news quite a bit in the last week or so, aka Terry Bollea is his real name.
Bollea?
B-O-L-L-E-A. Bollea.
B-O-L-L-E-A.
I thought it was Terry Hogan.
No.
No one ever has a cool name like Hulk Hogan.
No, not Hulk, but Terry Hogan. No?
Yeah.
Man, my dreams have just been shattered.
Well, when we get into some of the transcript from this videotape...
Don't do it, man. Don't do it.
Well, possibly the biggest name ever in professional wrestling?
Absolutely, yeah. Well...
Who's bigger?
You've had Andre the Giant, maybe?
You've had wrestlers that have peaked. your rocks.
I would say he's got to be the biggest, considering that he's still.
Yeah. But as far as like who you, when you think of the WWE universe,
well, he basically nationalized WWE.
In terms of personality, I mean,
he epitomized. I mean,
he created the,
and he was the face.
Yes.
Of the WWE for longer than anybody.
Yeah.
Everyone knows him.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk a little bit later on why Terry never... I'm going to keep calling him Terry just to get under your skin. Why Terry never became a...
Actually, no, that's a good idea because then I can keep my childhood hero.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk a little bit why Terry Bollea never became a bona fide movie star later after the film.
Oh, I could...
I think there's a lot of...
5 seconds into this, and I can tell you what.
Yeah, this film gives you a lot.
Let me tell you what, brother.
A lot of
once I lose the accent.
rightfully so, he never became a movie star. But I want to start off with why he's been in the news lately. Just last week, I think.
Yep.
I thought he had good comedic timing.
Hogan won a crazy, monumental $140 million victory in his lawsuit against Gawker Media back in 2012. God, was it 4 years ago I jerked off to that thing? Time flies. I mean, edit that out.
No, that's going in. That's going in the annals of our podcast.
That's a big file.
Said he didn't like amateur porn either. Way to contradict yourself.
4 years ago, Gawker website ran an article about Hogan's sexual tryst. Yak boy, did I use that word right? Tryst?
Correct.
With his best friend's wife. His best friend being popular radio DJ Bubba the Love Sponge. And
that's who the Bubba was.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. They didn't call him Bubba the Love Sponge in the article.
Well, believe it or not, that also is not his real name.
I'll just ruin that too.
And the article about the sex tape also featured a minute-long excerpt of the 30-minute tape, which included about 9 seconds of actual sex footage.
Yeah.
I couldn't access the video, unfortunately, for researching tonight's show.
Right, of course, strictly for research purposes.
Oh, we are professionals.
Yes, we are.
But apparently the writer of the article described a lot of what he saw in the 30-minute tape that they didn't actually put on the website. And
just a running play-by-play of Hogan's
Yeah, it was. I thought about...
At this point, they went into reverse cowboy.
It was that detailed?
All of a sudden, they hired Jim Ross to actually read it.
Oh, my God! Look what's happening! It's him and Jerry Lawler. Shut up, JR!
What the hell is going on?
He's flipping her on her stomach. Oh, my God! Shut up, JR!
It was play-by-play. And the only thing I made a note of or that stuck out to me was some of the guy's adjectives. For what he was witnessing, he did describe Hogan's penis as being the size and shape of a child's thermos.
I'm not sure what that means.
Like eating your lunchbox, not like the big construction worker thermos that you like get soap
in. Those kinds you used to get with your lunch pack. Those were some pretty.
Yeah, I was about to say my Dukes of Hazzard thermos was pretty damn.
I had an Empire Strikes Back. We're all dating ourselves really badly here. Dukes of Hazzard, Empire Strikes Back.
I just thought that was a very weird descriptive.
My close encounters of the third kind lunchbox had a really big thermos in it.
Those damn metal hinges.
But yeah. So anyway, when we're watching this movie tonight and he was wearing all his tight pants, I was...
That doesn't really look like a child's thermos.
Well, I was trying to... But anyway...
Maybe I need to go back and revisit the thermos. Maybe because we were a child, it was big, and now it's probably small.
I thought that was some sort of euphemism for going back and watching the movie. I'm going to revisit the thermos.
Yeah, we're all...
Tut, always revisiting the thermos.
But no, they're relatively small. Like I said, the construction workers had those big ones. They had soup in. And
oh, no, I always
like coffee on the bottom and like all these. No, not one of those with the like little.
I think it's still quite a compliment.
Yes, it was complimentary.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, it was. If someone said you have a penis the size of a thermos, so in any nature, you'd be like Cade style.
Okay. Yeah.
No one said that.
Well, Hogan claimed that Gawker invaded his privacy by publishing the video, which he claimed he was unaware of that it was being recorded.
Okay.
Apparently, there's footage on there that shows that he very well knew it was being recorded. That was rendered inadmissible during the trial. a lot of testimony.
I don't
understand.
I don't understand. Well, that's
yeah.
For
that, that's
podcast.
One of the, that was one of the things I didn't get was in the article, which we can get into how self serving that was, but
yeah, definitely.
It was a little haughty, but there was a lot of stuff that when he was saying we weren't allowed to admit this in court, I was wondering like why?
Why?
Yeah, I know there's a lot of legal loopholes, but if you've got evidence. If your lawyer's worth their shit, you're going to get that evidence admitted.
If that little bit of tape was admissible to court, then the whole tape should be admissible to court.
I agree. So I'm curious what the truth is there. Now, I've heard that, you know, because the FBI did kind of a wiretapping thing on...
That was another thing. What was the FBI?
Well, because it was illegal, you know, you record... I think if you record someone against their...
Yeah,
their knowledge when it first got leaked or whatever. I think.
Oh, okay. So they were investigating this.
Correct.
Okay, because I was almost thinking that the FBI was there pre-taping, and I'm
No.
Like, why was the FBI on
Bubba?
Like
our tax dollars are paying them to monitor Bubba the Love Sponge? No. It came from this.
Yeah.
And apparently, several folks have said that there's a lot of stuff on there that should have been. But wasn't admissible, other than just the guy who's on the hook for $140 million.
I would have been interested in reading a much longer point by point reason why some of that stuff didn't make it to the courtroom.
Well,
I agree.
The reason Hogan sued wasn't necessarily to prevent the swinging sex with
according
his best friend's
wife.
According to the article, it was to hide a portion of the tape where he went on a bit of a little racist rant to the woman he was having sex with.
Yeah.
And we know that is true because that's ultimately what got him fired from WWE,
yeah.
It wasn't the you know, having sex with your best friend's girl. It was the stuff he said on this tape,
yeah,
which also
like
got leaked.
That's like Jenny asked me, she was like, you know, how true do you think that accusation is? And I was like, well, WWE dropped him right, apparently he was in the latest game, and they yanked him out of it. They're not going to yank their most popular wrestler in their history of their franchise.
Well, apparently he was talking to about his daughter's sex life with this lady, and the N-word excerpt, I guess we'll call it. He's talking about his daughter Brooke's music career. Brooke Hogan, star of Three-Headed Shark Attack. You guys ever see that
Lord.
One?
Was she in Three-Headed Shark Attack or Two-Headed Shark Attack?
Oh, no, you're right. It was the first one, Two-Headed.
Yes.
Which is what Gawker has referred to my penis as a few times.
There actually is a Two-Headed Shark Attack and Three-Headed Shark Attack. Two-Headed was good. Bunch of chicks walking around in bikinis.
Two-Headed was nice.
Including Brooke Hogan.
Carmen Electra was in it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was directed, I believe, by Jim Gaworski, the guy who did Swamp Thing 2.
No. Really?
And The Hills Have Thighs. But he was talking about Brooke's music career, and the excerpt goes a little something like this. Should I do it in a Hogan voice?
Yes.
Right.
Does he say brother?
Can I? I'll add.
Let me tell you something.
Right, this is the quote that Gawker gives, and I'll add some brothers in for a little spice.
Let me tell you, brother. I mean, I don't have double standards. I mean, I'm a racist to a point, fucking N-word. But then when it comes to nice people and shit and whatever,
and then according to sources, he allegedly said,
"I mean, brother, I'd rather if she was gonna fuck some N-word." I'd rather have her marry an 8-foot-tall N-word worth $100 million like a basketball player, brother. I guess we're all a little racist. Fucking N-words.
That's what got him fired from WWE.
Man. I'm sure his last name is Terry Bollea or Terry Goebbels.
Well, it's pretty rough. Even written, like not hearing it. I know it sounded like he was saying it because my impression is so wonderful, but...
See, I caught some of Fool in there.
Yeah, a little bit of Mickey Rourke from Expendables. Well, Nick Denton.
That saddens me, man. That saddens me.
Had you never heard the?
No, I had heard that he had gone racist.
Boy, in the first 50 minutes, we have just shit all over Tuts.
Yeah, exactly. This is the greatest day ever, fuckers.
Well, he did have a thermos-sized cock. That's a feather in his. That's a feather in his cap.
No.
I've disgraced myself. I'm just going to go home and lie on my giant pile of cash with my giant thermos penis. With my new wife, who is just incredibly hot.
Yeah.
With ginormous breasts.
See, he's doing all right, Todd.
Yeah.
It'll be all right, buddy.
Not as good as an 8-foot-tall N-word making $100 million a year, but...
Well, especially because there are no 8-foot-tall N-words anywhere.
How tall is Yao Ming?
Nuh-uh.
Yao Ming was 7'5" or 7'6", okay. But he's not an N-word.
What about the great Khali?
Yeah, he's not making any money.
He's not making $100 million.
That guy's not. They're feeding him at the buffet, and that's.
Well, so Nick Denton, Gawker's publisher, who wrote the editorial we've been referencing in Huffington Post, he summed it all up as a case where crucial testimony was not allowed because Hogan's attorneys were free to play up the local celebrity versus the deviant internet bloggers from New York City. It was down in Florida the thing took place. And he also throws this...
Where did the taping happen?
Florida, I believe.
Oh, okay. All right, good.
That's where they all live.
Okay.
And he also throws this little nugget out there, which I think is worthy of discussion. Celebrities, especially ones as public about their personal and sex life as Hulk Hogan, have a narrower zone of privacy than ordinary people. Regardless of questions about Gawker's editorial standards and methods, self-promoters should not be allowed to seek attention around a specific topic and then claim privacy when the narrative takes an unwelcome turn. The benefits of publicity come at a price, and for someone like Hogan, whose whole life is a performance, it's a full-time and a long-term commitment.
No.
These always-on celebrities, you know, he had his own reality show with his family, very Kardashian, wanting to be Kardashian-esque, should not be surprised when their credibility is questioned, and journalists attempt to sort out what is real and what is fake. That's our job.
No.
And we intend to pursue it on both the courts and on the page. Thoughts?
I call bullshit.
Okay.
It's you can't sit there and say because the guy is promoting his reality TV show, his kids' health, you know, workout, prayers and vitamins, which he hasn't done since the 80s, but that's the Hogan I remember, damn it. Yeah, his movie.
He's still saying prayers and taking his vitamins. Just walking a little more gingerly.
But you can't sit there and say because this person is promoting A, then we have the right to dig into his private life of B. Now, if Hogan released that as a publicity stunt...
No, they weren't digging. Somebody just sent him the tape. That's not news. A very high-level public figure is having sex with his best friend's wife.
If somebody sent him the tape, they didn't go out and buy it.
They didn't pay anything.
Honestly,
for it.
You know, he gets no sympathy from me. I'm not really interested in the legality of it. When you have somebody who makes a public spectacle of himself, and I have a problem with this article and the way it was written, but I do agree with that. When you've got somebody who, like you said, the minute they leave the house, they're performing. And I think even further down in the article, and if you're going to get to this, I'm sorry to get ahead, but I think it's a good point. He talks about how, you know, Donald Trump has come out and said that when he's been criticized for making misogynist comments, that was for his TV character. And so I guess that part's interesting from a legal standpoint, because if you're going to have that blurred line without a precedent, when are you performing and when are you not?
Yeah.
And so if you make a spectacle out of yourself, and Hogan does, with a reality, anybody who has a reality TV show...
he appeared in court every day with a do-rag.
With a do-rag, yeah. He was a full...
He's a performer.
He was a...
And honestly, I have no sympathy for that, and, you know, we could spend the entire evening talking about the fact that there is no privacy anymore in the 21st century. If you willingly make a tape of yourself having sex, again, no sympathy for me.
If someone goes into your house, breaks into your home, steals a videotape from your safe or just in your bedroom, then they should be punished to the fullest extent of the law. Yeah. And anyone who distributes or exhibits
that's what I found was odd. If I think you're going to get to this, his settlement with Bubba, because if somebody broke into my house and stole a sex tape of me, then I should be going full bore after that person.
One of your many, many tapes.
Even if, like, Cody stole it and then gave it to you and you published it, I don't really have recourse against you as a publisher, but
you
I should
keep
have
that
recourse.
For personal use.
But I should have recourse against Cody, if that makes sense.
Well, first of all, I make Cody wear a mask, so you can't really tell it's him in the videotapes.
Oh, you can always tell that lovable visage.
Well, it's a Robin mask, so it just covers about this little bit of his face.
Covers the eyes.
Sorry, did my giant thermos penis give it away?
Andy wears a little circle on his chest with a C for Cody. You said you liked it, Dan. The fact that, one, he apparently knew he was being recorded.
Yeah, see, that changes
two,
the total,
he did,
total game.
He did take Bubba to court, but settled for $5,000 and Bubba would help him out in this suit against Gauntlet.
If that's according to the
correct,
according to our well, it's not. It's not debatable that he settled for $5,000. The reason
he
was
being recorded against him, knowing you would have sued this dude for a lot more
for
than five
a
grand.
Crap ton.
I just have a huge problem with that term that they mention when he's talking about that quote scripted reality end quote. That is so bafflingly and obviously stupid. Scripted reality.
But that's what these shows are.
That's what, yeah,
the Kardashians
exactly.
act. You think you're watching real life, and it's not.
But it's scripted.
Completely
there's no reality to it. That's the biggest oxymoron ever.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Absolutely.
Scripted reality. Reality doesn't have a script. Yeah, so, I mean, that's a horseshit stance to take.
I agree.
I think that's the more accurate term some people use, though, for reality television. They call it scripted reality.
I call it bullshit.
Crap. Because they're not actors.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Because they're playing themselves in a false reality.
So they're not playing themselves.
No.
They're just using their real given name.
Then there's a producer right off camera going, "Mincy, can you show some more anger in this scene? Show some more anger."
But then you got to wonder, like the Kardashians, if they're followed by cameras 24 hours a day, it has to become themselves.
Then you have no privacy.
They have no space to.
Then you can never argue privacy in a court of law.
Right,
if you have cameras
you
on
you
24
it.
Hours a day.
Correct.
But what if it's camera D belonging to somebody else who's not paying you?
Well, and that's why people get upset when Kanye West goes nuts on a paparazzi guy. It's like, dude, you live with cameras around you 24/7. I'm a poor schlub, you know, trying to sell some pictures to TMZ, and you're going to come over here and break my camera?
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm getting paid for every picture that's taken of me.
That's part of his act, though, too. That's just this whole thing made me want to pine once again, Tut, for the dream refuge of my abandoned sawmill. And after I read the entire thing, I honestly was about to say, fuck the sawmill. I want to charter a boat and drive several hundred miles off the coast of California and see if I can't find a nice deserted island on it so I can be away from humanity forever. The fucking guy who writes this article...
Now, keep in mind, he's on the hook for $140 million.
Yeah, okay. You know what? But, dude, I'm protecting the Fourth Estate, Woodward and Bernstein to take down the Nixon administration.
If I fall, journalism falls.
You're a scumbag. Now, again, I put him in the same category... Reality TV and TMZ and Deadspin and this guy, they're all in the same category together, and so is cocaine. It's, don't blame, you know, there wouldn't be a supply if there wasn't a demand. People eat this shit up, they watch reality TV, they read this shit, but I mean, this guy was coming off as like the wounded warrior of the Fourth Estate. And I was like, man, fuck you. You're a scumbag. You know, I respect your right to make money, but you're, you know, just like Hogan's playing with fire... If he's going to always be on, so are you, and this is your fucking business. You run the risk of having something like this happen to you.
And they do, and ultimately all this really is about is royalties.
Yeah.
He made a shit ton of money off of that sex tape.
The jury came up with some bizarre figure, like he made $4 off every click on the video. And they broke it down to how many people stopped watching, like at 30 seconds, and... You know, guys like me who watch,
and that's all this really is. It's just a royalty grab. He, you know, hey, made a shit ton of money, and I didn't see any of it. Yeah. So he basically just sued him to get money,
and he got it.
What they ought to do is they ought to make them pay up, but then play all the tapes in their entirety.
Yeah, really.
Yeah,
because that's the only thing that's really kind of devastating
to me
that I don't like.
Million, but we own the tapes now.
Yeah. And we're playing the entire.
And we're having a constant stream with your N-word rants. God knows what else is on.
Hell, we're gonna four-wall a theater and show this shit on the big screen. It's ours.
Well, can you imagine a thermos cock in IMAX?
Oh my God, it's coming at me!
Did you
literally
do a 3D conversion?
That's not soup.
It's the double XM.
Oh God, he's putting the rubber on. Oh, take it easy, bro.
What? Like a huge Glad sack?
Hey, like a shoehorn to get that thing on.
Fucking thing disgusted me. I'm sorry. I'm off the soapbox.
It was interesting, and I was kind of on the fence of what film to do, but I kept reading a lot about this, and when I saw that Netflix Instant had the only Hulk Hogan movie I've ever seen, No Holds Barred, I hadn't seen it since the theater in 1989, I thought it might be worth revisiting.
It was.
You know, usually this kind of stuff is what we talk about at the pub on our non-podcast nights, whatever we read about in the news. And we don't really do that.
Oh, I thought you were going to say our various thermos-sized cocks.
Well,
that's what I talk about.
That's pub talk.
I believe the word you're looking for is thimble.
Thimble thermos?
Okay. Femmes? I had a feeling you guys would have pretty strong opinions either way. Before we get into 1989's No Holds Barred, beer, cigar, how's it treating you?
I like them individually. I'm not sure that they're kind of working together because I think the back taste of the cigar with the backwash of the beer is kind of going a little acidic.
That's I'm really going to say that the hoppiness for the beer is like really killing it for me on the backside. You know, just take a puff on the cigar, enjoying that, and then you take a beer and it just, I mean, one is overpowering to the other.
The cigar is a very nice medium.
It is.
On the lighter side of medium, if you will. It's a very light smoking cigar, very easy draft, very good smoke aroma coming through it. I love the smell of the thing. The taste is good, but yeah, I think the beer is totally outpowering it.
It's a stand up and notice me beer.
Yeah, it's definitely
that we all can't get enough of.
You guys put into words what I would have had trouble articulating. I like definitely on their own. I like the cigar.
I do too.
I think what you both said, there's something kind of the backwash is kind of killing a little bit of the flavor.
Yeah, I think it's muting it a little bit. I don't think I'm getting. I need to step away from the beer for a few minutes and then you know take a few puffs on the cigar and not follow it up with a drink.
Yeah.
I've been saying that for 15 years. I just step away from the beer for a few minutes.
But I mean, I guess ultimately that's the definition of a pairing fail.
Yeah.
You have to just keep these so apart from each other.
They're totally great by themselves, but yeah. It sucks.
It's like the Hogan and Warrior. It's a clash of...
They're both good. They're both good for the company, but they can't
great personalities, but they just can't work together. It is a really...
Which is bad because I like the cigar. For my first offering from La Gloria Cubana... Mm-hmm. I'm really liking it.
I think I actually said that once about a girl I dated briefly. We're great when we're just far apart. We're just together, it's just not good. We're on our own, we're great.
But yeah, I'm going to give them a little bit of space around each other because I want to give the cigar especially a fair shot here. It's not a very complex beer.
No, it's not.
No, it's pretty straightforward.
It's bitter, smoky. Delicious. It's a good beer.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a really good
beer. I agree.
I'm gonna just get some space from the beer as
you're taking it down. But what's interesting to me though is that you've got the smokiness of the barrel stuff. But man, the hops for me is you know I kind of notice those hops. Those hops just kind of bitter it all up, and to where now I tasted the smoke more off of the first half of the pint, and now I'm getting more of the hops to where I'm focusing more on the hops. So I'm losing that smoke.
It's hard to deny, and the hops definitely take a front seat to everything else going on, which I personally love. I know you're probably loving it.
But it's a good tasting beer, though.
Okay, let's try to space them out a little bit so you get some true impressions of the cigar and the beer, and we'll revisit here in a little bit.
Okay.
Oh, No Holds Barred, 1989.
Let me tell you something, Kate. No Holds Barred was my debut, brother.
And it shows. Directed by Thomas J. Wright, who went on to TV. Lots and lots of TV.
Like he never directed another film ever again.
I don't believe he ever did. Hey, me, man. All
right, before we get into this movie, this epic biopic, fictional biopic, if you will, is this... I noticed the WWE brand when it kicks
this
was in.
Actually was it the first? Produced by Vince and... Hulk, and it could have very well been the very first WWE,
which now they're doing a whole bunch. They're doing a whole slew of them
straight to video. But this was, I think, their first
offering.
And then I don't think they did it for a while.
No, they didn't.
rumor has it that before they shot, they didn't like the script, so Vince and Hulk hold up and rewrote some of it to their liking.
Oh, that was to Terry's dialogue was to his liking.
Yeah, that's right, Todd.
Gentle Terry.
Yeah, that's
when
right.
He does talk. It's very gentle in this movie,
isn't that right, John?
This isn't P.T. Anderson and Daniel Day Lewis holding up in a hotel room for a weekend to rewrite some scenes.
Let me tell you something, Missy. I am a literary genius.
Let me tell you something, brother.
When I was attending Stephen F. Austin University in Nacogdoches, Texas, I majored in English literature.
Speaking of, my boys lost.
Oh, yeah.
It was a heartbreaker. Basketball.
It was close. Like 2 points, huh?
Good game. Fun game to watch, but heartbreaker.
Imagine that. Stephen F. Austin losing.
Were you a lit major, brother? I was a forestry major, brother.
Was it Steve Spurrier said after that the library at Auburn caught fire or whatever, and or something? Something happened at the Auburn library, and Spurrier says, "Too bad. I bet half the books weren't even colored yet."
No, that's a good one for Steve and Boston.
Those idiots.
Hey, easy.
Sorry.
My pennant.
We didn't have time to get the pennant. So they're coming. Well, as the movie starts up, the first thing we hear is the bickering of the classic wrestling broadcast team of Mean Gene Okerlund and Jesse the Body Ventura.
Jesse the Body and Mean Gene.
Gene Okerlund.
Just hearing those two go at it just brought back so many memories. I was instantly in a happy place.
Yeah, yeah.
Gene criticizing Jesse's crazy clothes. He had like a chainmail headdress and then a skull do-rag.
So it's like a wrestling thing because like I alluded to earlier, Lawler and JR used to do that all the time. So it was
later
like,
on,
you're wrong, Mean Gene.
The King.
Well, you had before that, Bobby the Brain going at
Bobby the Brain, yeah. It just brought back
Gorilla Monsoon.
That awesome
childhood. Yeah. I got ported back to 13 years old.
It immediately. And then legendary WWE announcer Ray Finkel and starts announcing things. That guy was the announcer for so long.
It was just so cool seeing Jesse the Body there, man.
Yeah.
When he had that, when he had that Bo Derek chainmail piece
on, because you're like, you remember, like, man, there's a time when Jesse the Body wasn't so crazy because he's so out there now.
Yeah.
No, there wasn't.
He's always been crazy.
That's your normal baseline of him. He's got like feathers everywhere. He was never normal.
Granted, it was an improvement over that hair piece he had on in The Running Man.
Well, that was a hell of a hair piece. Finkel comes on and announces the challenger of tonight's main event, Jake Bullitt. Do you recognize who that guy was? Mm-hmm. Axe of Demolition.
No way.
Yeah, the Demolition guy. Kiss face paint.
Without that paint, I didn't
leather,
recognize it. Because it was one of those things where
Didn't he have eye paint on all of a sudden?
He had mascara.
But like, did he have that on all the time? Like, all of a sudden, I felt like he didn't start the fight with that, and then five minutes later he had it?
He looked really bizarre.
But what I liked was,
I think that was just his natural body secreting it, and it just, he starts to come on.
Steroids came out of his eyes.
Was as part of Demolition, they wore, like, the Kiss...
Yeah.
Face paint and like the really gay S&M like spiked, you know, Judas Priest style gloves and that was Axe.
Okay, because it was one of those things to where I knew I should have recognized him, but I couldn't place him.
And then he announces the defending champion
Rip,
played by Hulk Hogan.
Rip
marches down to the ring doing all the typical Hulkster stuff, high five and kids. Listening to the
crowd.
But
what's so funny is that I'm watching this and I'm listening to this, and one of the things that I like about listening to it on the iPad out on the deck smoking a cigar is I got the Bose on.
You can hear
and I can hear all the audio quality. And this was so horribly matched. It was all wild audio. I mean, it was all
also horrible. I noticed on TV, you hear him like, "Oh yeah, rip him, rip him, rip him, rip him. But his lips aren't moving.
Yeah, he's not
saying any of it.
It's not even close to in sync or anything.
Yeah, it was bad.
Yo, turns out it's all edited by Vince McMahon. God.
But he's calling people brother. I mean, it's Hulk Hogan.
Yeah,
he's
it is.
He's not wearing the yellow and the red, but he's Hulk Hogan. And he's got this little hang loose thing he does with his hands,
which is the rip him.
And he's just mumbling rip and rip him over and over and over again.
It's like the Sesame Street puppet. Yep.
It says rip.
Watching the match on TV as it starts is a room full of executives from a rival television network. Their new boss, Mr. Brell, played by Kurt Fuller.
Kurt Fuller.
Speaking of Running Man, he's the producer in the booth of Running Man.
Yeah. Lights.
He's one of those dudes. If you see him, you're like, "Oh, that fucking guy." You've seen him in just a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
The last thing I saw him in was Psych.
Yes,
he was Woody.
He was Woody.
the
loved Woody, man.
If you remember, he was also the sheriff in the first scary movie, the first Scream spoof.
Yeah.
Was he? He sits down to interview Anna Faris, and like he does the cop thing where he puts his gun and flashlight on the table, but then he keeps pulling stuff out, handcuffs, a butt plug, a ball gag, and setting them on the table.
A thermos?
He may have pulled a thermos out.
Well, he's really good in this.
It would also fit in with his Woody character in Psych.
Playing the typical evil 80s businessman.
Corporate evil.
He's just taken over this network, the World Television Network.
The WTN.
If you remember, for a while, they were right up there with CBS. The old WTN.
But he's lamenting that the channel's ratings plunge every time Rip comes on wrestling on the rival network. And he's hoping maybe this match will be the one Rip loses and they can make a little dent in the viewership. Well, Rip doesn't lose, and with a few well-placed boots and elbows, he gets a 3 count.
Which I have to say, man, the wrestling in this movie
is horrible.
Is horrible.
The worst match on Monday Night Raw right now, the worst match, like the Bo Austin stuff, is better than any wrestling in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's horrible.
How do you make a Hulk Hogan wrestling movie and it's this terrible wrestling?
There's no body slams. There's no nothing. I mean, it's just punches.
They probably had to get some sort of bonding from an insurance company that they weren't going to kill anyone.
Maybe, yeah.
And granted, wrestling was a little tamer back then.
Yeah, because they were still calling it sports.
You know.
It was on the sports page and all that good stuff.
Which, this whole movie's based on wrestling being real.
Yeah, well, it was before the time that, you know,
before
they got out.
People knew. Which we never knew. We bought
it. I bought it.
Hook, line, and sinker, we bought it. I remember
when my first time I heard it was fake, and I was like,
I was with you. That was like 6 months ago. He was in tears. He was so distraught.
It was 2 hours ago.
Man, I just find out wrestling's fake. Now Hulk Hogan's a racist.
He's like, what?
What?
What? Wrestling's fake?
No.
What?
No.
No. No, it's as real as you want it to be.
It's like that six-year-old who just learned Santa Claus isn't real.
Oh, God. No.
Sorry.
Next thing you know, if we tell them that whole Easter thing's bullshit.
Wait, oh. What? Hold on. I just got a text from Tuttle's mom. Whatever you do, don't mention Santa Claus.
Oh.
We should have just stuck to the Easter
Bunny. This is a horrible fucking day.
There is no Easter Bunny. There. Is that safe?
You mean my parents put those eggs out there every Easter Sunday?
My life is done. I mean, just... What's the point? What's the point of going on?
We have a podcast.
Tuttle has removed his tweed and taken to one of the donkeys in the backyard.
No, I am here doing podcast excellence. I am a professional. I will soldier on.
We have the number one ranked film, cigar, and beer podcast in the entire universe. Not just the WWE universe. The TNCC universe.
That's right. And that's because we are a bunch of professionals.
That's right. So soldier on, soldier boy.
I just can't believe he's a racist.
It's all right, buddy.
Well, the next morning...
We'll make it through the night together.
At World Television Network headquarters. Burrell is holding court in the boardroom, screaming at his minions to find a way and get Rip out of his current contract and onto his network. He wants that... He keeps calling him a jockass.
Jockass!
So bad. He reduces one female executive to tears. She's like... He's all, what's your idea for success?
I've got
a scripted sitcom that I think people will like.
Go take a leak.
Why don't you go take a leak? Starts crying. Oh, God, the 80s. And he tears one other guy at asshole. He's like, how about a game show?
Fuller actually fulfills that role very well. He played, I'm now remembering, in Ghostbusters 2. He was the deputy mayor that has them locked up. He plays the smarmy suit pretty well.
He always does.
This movie...
Well, he's got that little look when he hunches down.
This movie literally would be unwatchable without him.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yes. He keeps this sucker going. Well, Burrell finally decides he'll just invite Rip up to the office and handle it himself. He's a master negotiator. He didn't get this job, you know, for his good looks. So, Rip shows up at the World Television Network headquarters wearing this amazing red and black unitard.
and this is just going to be, you know...
It's like, and it's all rayon.
I have forgotten, just, like, the absurdity.
He wears
like,
it everywhere.
He just...
It's not that he's dressing like that for the ring. He's dressing like that in real life.
No, those are his leisure clothes.
He doesn't put on a t-shirt and a pair of jeans. Those are his normal clothes.
His leisure clothes are knee-high red Superman boots and a red and black onesie.
And he just goes out, you know, I got to go to the grocery store, and I'm just...
And matching, he's always got the matching do-rag on.
Yeah. Rip definitely coordinates.
Oh, it's very coordinated. It's very snazzy. It starts off meeting cordially enough, but when Rip politely declines Brell's offer of a blank check, he's like, whatever you want. And he tries to leave, and Brell puts his hand on him. But Rip stays cool, and then eventually he really puts his hands on him when he tries to leave. Calls him a jockass.
Now we can see Brell is not gonna. He's not realizing he's really overstepping his boundaries.
A little bit. He's pushing Rip around.
Yeah.
Big mistake. Rip shoves the check down Brell's throat.
Well, he was like a. What, my money's not good enough for you? I find that hard to swallow.
Swallow this. I won't be around when this check clears.
I think that's really the first thing we've heard him say.
Yeah.
He's a man of few words. Well, he shoves it down his throat and he leaves. But as he walks out the door, he stops in the doorway and looks back at Brell and his two sidekicks and does the...
Ripple.
The little aloha.
Don't they both cower in fear, too? Like,
yeah, they think he's going to...
Awesome.
It was so awesome.
By the way, you should point out that one of Fuller's two minions, there's Ordway, and another guy is played by a former Academy Award nominee, David Paver.
David, what is he an Academy Award nominee?
That was the short dude?
Yeah, the short guy.
I love that guy.
I know he's been nominated for an award for something.
Oh, man. City Slickers, he was part of the...
He was in both City Slickers.
Yeah.
I remember...
Ben and Iris Ice Cream.
The other guy... I don't know if you guys are big Seinfeld fans or not.
Yes.
The one, the guy who performed the Briss...
That's
him. He looks a lot older, but he's the guy, the, what do you call it, the...
Moyle.
The Moyle who fucks up the Briss and snips the kid's wiener a little too much. That was him. And he was so good. He's one of the classic Seinfeld guest appearances, but that was this guy.
But yeah, that movie was weird that way, because I mean, most of the people in it,
you recognize.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, after he gives the Rip'em sign and leaves... Brell quickly calls down to the garage to set in place Plan B. When Rip rides off in his limo, the driver has been replaced with one of Brell's goons, and Rip immediately notices they're driving in the wrong direction. Now, what happens next is the most head-scratching action sequence.
Doesn't he come out with a brother? It's not brother. Hey, you were supposed to turn over there, pal!
You're going the wrong way, brother.
What happens now is the guy raises the barrier in the limousine to where it separates them.
But now it's like a James Bond evil villain car because everything, all the windows close over.
Yeah, they lock.
Like these metal barriers. Like, wait a second. So he knew that, was just that he was going to... Wait, why does he have this car?
Brell thinks ahead. He's smart.
But that makes no sense. Why does
the world television
network?
Yeah, that's right. You did not run the world television network without thinking ahead.
I was just thinking, how did he know he was going to need a car like this? Or, more importantly...
Where did he get it?
Exactly.
Don't you think Brell picks up a car sometimes, and when he starts to choke them, they try to escape, and so he's got the thing on lockdown?
Yes, evil limos are us. you need the one with the locking windows and the bar?
It's not just between the driver and that. The side things, the skylight, they all get the little metal cover,
But here's the deal that
we
don't
have anti-secret agent escape plan and anti-angry hooker escape plan. Why don't you give me something in between the two?
Oh, you want the Mincy package?
I was about to say we can't really float. We can't really float the cost.
We have one called the Doctor.
Oh, please. But here's what I don't understand. Rip immediately starts kicking the side doors of the back of the limousine, and somehow that sends the car careening into oncoming traffic. It's leaping off cliffs.
He basically kicks the car. It's like when Superman flies around the Earth and makes it go in reverse. He basically kicks the car apart from the inside.
But these kicks should not be... The driver has no control over
that's
it.
That's like...
He's driving through houses that are destroying...
He's Rip. One solid kick from him, and that thing's just off its axis.
It's crazy. It's one of the most crazy. I'm like, that driver should not be feeling the effects of any of what Rip is doing back there.
That actually reminded me of a cab ride I was in once in Boston. I mispronounced the neighborhood. I asked the guy to take me to, and he started talking some shit, and I kicked the thing apart. We ended up in Vermont.
I'm glad you got back.
Hell of a hitchhike, let me tell you.
And brought back some hell of maple syrup, though. That was delicious. Or was that from a tree you actually ran over in the cab?
And... yeah, there was some syrup dripping everywhere after that. Yeah.
Well, anywho, the limo finally somehow makes it to an abandoned... He still gets to his destination, this abandoned warehouse, where there's a team of World Television Network thugs waiting for them.
So not only did Braille know to get the escape-proof limo, he was like, when I'm running this television network, I'm going to need some goons.
In case, I need a warehouse and just station the goons there for on-call.
In case a negotiation goes south, I want to be able to send whoever I was trying to bring to our network and beat the shit out of them in the warehouse. Well, they do. Rip launches himself through the metal fortified ceiling of the
slow
limousine.
Motion. Jumps up and lands in a perfect gymnast Olympic 10 on the roof.
I mean, he literally propels himself through a steel roof onto the hood of a limousine.
All the while.
Oh, yeah, there's no word. It's a lot of guttural noises. He takes out the thugs with a series of wrestling moves. Clotheslines. Legs, like knocking their legs out.
He picks up one, body slams him into the car.
Actually, I'd like Tuttle to keep making those noises throughout the show because that's what it's like watching the movie.
That's what I was going
for. People are
doing
stuff in the background. There's always somebody going.
He's smashing dudes through the windows of the limo. Oh, yeah. The previously escape-proof windows. He's now putting these guys' heads through it.
He's launching these poor bastards through all the windows.
And again, it's some of the most horrible action fighting stuff.
And whenever someone does get a punch in, he gives them those crazy Hulk Hogan eyes.
The with the shaky cheeks.
Yeah, the shaky cheeks.
But see, as a kid,
mustache sweat flying everywhere.
It's so funny now because as a kid, I didn't see how formulaic it was to where there's the time where, and you even see this in the first axe match. Where you know
the fight turns,
yeah. Where he's on the ground and the wrestler, the referee
sleeper
always
hold, two
sleeper
arms
hold,
up,
the
and then
referee
the third
always
one.
Holds it, two holds, and then he gets up with the crazy eyes. And
the audience goes crazy. Hulk is just taking punches,
and then he gets punched in the face.
His last 20 matches have gone the exact same way.
I can't believe how a kid I never picked up on that. Yeah. I was always like, oh, he's coming around.
We were 13 and we just wanted to believe, man.
You know what though, Tut? I'm
40 and I just want to believe, man.
You say that as a kid, but I remember Cody and I in 98, 99, him coming over to my mom's house right after college, and we would watch the Monday Night Wars, WCW.
Oh, yeah.
And
hell
all.
Yeah.
And we were into it. We weren't thinking, you know, this is just... We were like, get up! We were screaming at the TV. We were these idiots that fell for it. I mean, we were... And that was kind of around the point where that was right around when it was... Stone Cold kind of made that.
Yeah.
When he and McMahon got into their epic stuff, it became quite clear that you're watching a spectacle that was staged.
Right, right.
But it was so damn entertaining.
But see, to me as an industry, that's what I think that is so outstanding with the industry, with this company, is that they went through a phase to where, all right, here's my product. And then they got busted. Your product is a bunch of bullshit. And then they're like, you know what? It is. And it became even more popular.
But here's Stephanie McMahon.
Because now you're wanting to figure out what the script is. Where the script is going.
They didn't miss a beat.
It's
crazy.
It's male soap
opera. Ratings
dude.
Are falling. I guess it's time to make Trish Stratus a pro wrestler.
Thank you. Thank
how come
you.
We could do a Trish Stratus movie tonight?
We should.
Let's find
I've
one.
Seen one. It wasn't bad.
No, but the only thing that I got... you talk about that, but what was... The thing I heard and I was watching this, and then it dawned on me, I had to look it up. And what depressed me about this is I was like, I remember this movie. God, you know, and it's kind of the same way. I was like, oh man, I remember this movie. I loved it. Oh man, what was I liking about it?
It was one of those.
But then I had to look it up, and I was like, the thing I realized, if I did my math right, Hogan was 35 when he did this.
No.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, he's pushing 60. Or he's in his early 60s.
I hate it when you say stuff like that.
He was 35.
Wow, all right.
Okay, I hated it worse when I was like, oh, release date, June 89. I was 13.
Yeah, that's the way I was.
Then I got nothing after that could depress me any worse.
Well, here's the thing. Like I said,
knowing he's younger than me now depresses me.
He was 29 when he did the Rocky movie. as Thunder Lips.
That's what he always looked mid-40s.
Yeah, he really looked even, really
That's what I'm saying. You look at him now, go back and look at him on TV, and like, and that's what I look at. It's like, he's like immortal. He has never changed. It's the same new rag, the handlebar mustache. He's like,
if you slice that thermos cock in half and count the rings, he's 110 years old.
Let me tell you something, Kane. Just take your
bio trees.
No, I don't encourage
examine this
that.
Cock here and see how old this guy really is.
And get the Gawker lawyers on the phone. I think I broke this case wide open.
Wow, really? 35?
Yeah.
I like your comment. He's always looked mid-40s.
Yes.
He really has.
No. Hi. Look at him. Just look at him, and then like look at a picture of him from the trial.
Yeah, yeah.
He looks exactly the same.
Yeah. No, like Cody's right. Go back and watch Rocky 3. Right. He's like not even 30, and he looks the same.
Yeah.
Well, those people live out in Florida, man. They just bake so much. They just kind of stay in
that.
That
was always
it's like baking a vase. It just kind of stays like that. Look at the shit I baked in art class, and you know, 20 years ago, and it looks the exact same on the shelf. I know, because my mom gave it all back to me recently. That's weird, right? Thought you might want this. Well, I made it for you, but all right, I'll take it. Again, that's something for my therapist. We don't need to.
25 years, it's been long enough, Kate.
This was yesterday. So he beats the shit out of all these people, leaving only the limo driver. This poor limo driver. Rip yanks him out, and sure enough, they're just staring at the guy.
What's that smell?
Dookie.
And he throws the poor bastard.
I mean, he says it like Braveheart says, freedom! He's all, Dookie!
Actually, we don't see the throw. He's holding him up by his collar. And honestly, I hadn't seen this movie since the theater in 1989. That's the only thing I've always remembered about this movie was that dookie scene.
What adult uses the word dookie?
Well, first of all, do you notice when he yanks him out of the thing, his ass
is soaking
wet?
That guy had some major diarrhea.
If you're that scared,
I
you're
guess
not
if you're
a
limo and a guy in the back is just kicking the car to pieces, you're just evacuating everything.
You're not
from your
pinching
system.
On a solid loaf, you're spraying.
I wasn't hired to drive this James Bond limo villain car.
You knew what you were getting in when you signed up for this. But, like, it was the only thing I remembered, but it got me thinking, too.
It was...
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
It was obvious this movie was geared towards 13-year-olds.
Oh, it sure was. I certainly enjoyed it. It got me thinking, do y'all have any good shitting-your-pants stories?
No.
Recently or from somewhere in the past?
No.
I'm sure I shit my pants in the past, but my age was a single digit at that point.
It reminded me of...
But apparently you do, if you're asking.
I do.
You have some pants-shitting stories.
I was hoping you guys might...
No, go ahead.
Enter the fold.
Let's have a pants-shit sidebar.
Yeah.
All right. When did you duke in your diapers?
It would have been right around this time, actually. Middle school.
This time today.
It would have been around this time last night. No. 1989-ish, I guess. I rode a carpool with a fellow middle schooler. And his mother didn't want to drive out of the route to school to pick me up, so I had to walk a couple blocks to a baseball field, and she'd pick me up on the way.
Yeah.
And I was walking, I was about halfway there, and I GNL'd, gambled and lost. I thought it was a fart, and it turned into something else. And I was I was standing there, and I was like, I got two options. I can either I can either catch my ride with shit in my pants, but that's going to be an interesting day at the office, or I can hightail it and run home, but she won't wait for me. I knew this chick. She would not wait for me if I wasn't at that corner.
Dude, you got to, at that point, it's like I told Tut, when the first thing you did this morning was drop two beers as you were loading them in your truck, you get back in bed. At that point... When you walk down there and you, as you so poetically put it, gambled and lost, at that point, dude, you just go back home and take a sick day.
Well, that was not... I went with plan C, which was I went behind some shrubs, took my soiled tidy whities off, and flung them over some poor bastard's fence. and I went to school with no underpants on.
So he, the guy who...
He basically just lost. He didn't give... The guy
that goes out there the next day, I think I'll go pick some weeds. Oh, God! Oh, my God!
That old retired guy who went out into his backyard to smoke a pipe and have his morning coffee and found some 12-year-old's shitty drawer.
I heard my neighbor 78 years old. Every morning I wake up is a good day. Oh, God! Oh, Helen, bring the defibrillator. There's some drawers out here with Dookie in them.
I swear, I still think about it, and I always wanted to go knock on his door, like as an adult, and be like, hey. Remember in the Behind the Music when Leif Garrett went and talked to the guy he paralyzed in the accident?
This dude is not going to thank you for it like that guy did. I remember that when he's all, you saved my life, brother. This guy's not going to say that to you.
I always wanted to knock on his door, and he's like, hello. And be like, hey, brother. It was me. Those were my underpants. And, like, he'd look at me and we'd embrace, like, oh, God.
No, he's going to answer the door.
They landed on my back porch. I walked outside and I slipped on him. It was disgusting.
He's going to answer the door with a seeing eye dog. And he's all, who is it? And she's all, oh, I'm sorry. It's my husband, Harold. He's been blind every day since April of 1989 when he saw something so hideous we can't talk about it. He was once a respected neurosurgeon.
I always wondered what happened to that guy.
I remember that Leif Garrett one, dude. You weren't going to get that. You used to change my life around, brother.
The guy in the wheelchair, they embraced. No, they wouldn't have that tender moment.
Well, that or they were going to ask, since we have no kids, why are there 12-year-old underpants in our backyard?
Well, I just saw a lot of a lot of questions coming
out. Turns out
the
guy served 10 years in Huntsville for child abuse. Because you know there was some blood in that shit.
No. No. What were you eating at 12 years old? Anyway, that's my Dookie story.
Well, it is a magnificent story.
It was an epic story
that I will promptly erase with alcohol.
No, I'm keeping that. I'm keeping that up there. I want to. I laugh so hard I get my tears and my stomach hurts.
My job is done.
Shit, hell.
Before we get back to the story, how's the beer and cigar treating you guys? My cigar's starting to burn pretty fast. I don't want to miss out on talking about it. Are you guys separating the beer and the cigar a little bit, giving them a little bit of space?
I'm trying to remain comfortable as a smooth bowel movement on a late 80s afternoon. Oh, I mean, no, it's all very good.
Admittingly, it's very hard to lay off the beer when we're talking about this movie. The first instinct is just to drink.
It's definitely a disservice to the cigar to pair it with the beer because the cigar's got such a real just a mild but good tobacco taste to it, but it's totally overpowered by the arrogant bastard. Fucking arrogant bastard. It's a good smoking cigar. The draw on it's been great.
It's got a great medium, on the like you said on the mild side, a medium flavor. That spice has maintained for me, but very in a nice, non-intrusive way. I mean, it's just there,
right?
But it matches with that the creaminess and a little bit of woodsiness.
Yeah,
I have given it some space. I do pick up more on that the woodsy, leathery part.
Yeah, it's got a bit of mineral to it.
But like Tut said, it's mild, so It is simply just being overpowered by this beer.
Yeah, and I could see you really liking this away from the beer.
Yeah, no, I'm.
Yeah, I'm talking like it's like on a day like today. If we weren't doing the podcast and I was just out on the back deck, this is a great early afternoon cigar. I have just been beat down by the day. This is a good taste in cigar.
Some 12-year-old just threw his fucking underpants over my. They land on your head.
Again.
No, nothing can make this day worse.
Woodsy and leathery, like Cade's adolescent drawers.
But thank goodness I have my La Gloria here. It'd be a perfect cigar for that day.
It's a good smoke. Construction-wise, I've had an excellent burn line, smooth draw, perfect amount of air going through it.
Yeah. It's a great... I would say it's like in the Texas heat, like once we get into August, when it's just
balls
12-year-old
hot.
Drawers hot.
Can we save that audio for...
It'd be a good light smoke for that heat of the day. It's a good cigar.
And the wrapper, especially the hotter it gets, it's got a really oily kind of texture to it. It's just a really good-looking cigar.
Yeah.
Pairing aside, I want to smoke more.
I really do.
I like it. But the leather, a little bit of cream, The mineral you said, I mean, it's not boring.
No, no.
It's got a lot of going on.
This is an exclusive from Famous. Mm-hmm. Famous Smoke. Okay.
Can I tell you how much now?
Yeah, go ahead.
We fur along?
Yeah.
You want to guess, or?
It just occurred to me that I have a Dookie story. Six. It's not my own.
Hold it.
It's an exclusive. It's an exclusive, so I'll go 7. 725.
Sound good?
All right.
$7.
All right.
You get a 4-pack right now on Famous Smoke Shop's website for a hair under, I think a hair under $25.
Which yeah.
Or a hair under $28. I think it's 20 cents. Which would bring it right, right under $28, which brings about $7 a stick.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty good value.
Yes. And this is just my opinion. I think exclusives always go about $1 to $2 more than what they would if they were general retail. But yeah, I think it's a definitely decent price for this stick.
I think it's priced accordingly.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah,
we smoked lately quite a few Robustos in that price range, which are gone before you know it. They don't really have time to develop if you're smoking a little bit faster.
Yeah,
$7 for a Toro. You know, we're what, an hour and a half in.
Yeah,
I'm liking it. I'm liking it a lot.
I agree.
And I'd like to try it with a lighter beer.
Yeah.
Less hoppy, just a little more smooth. I still think the El Super B would have been a little too much going on.
Yeah,
to,
I think so.
I think it would have clashed.
The less hoppiness of the Super B would probably benefit this cigar.
Sit on your deck with a Hans Pils and this bad boy.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. If you go like a really light lager, I think that it would be good. Another good one would be coffee. I think coffee with this would be excellent.
Oh, yeah. Probably. Not coffee stout, like a real
no,
cup
like a real
of coffee.
Cup of coffee, yeah.
We drink those too. Okay. okay, yeah. So thumbs up for me. I can see past the pairing, and I'm liking it, and I'm liking the beer too.
Oh, I'm a big fan of Stone. I like their Stone IPA. Arrogant Bastard.
Is the IPA with the green goblin on it?
That's the Stone, isn't it?
Yeah, Stone.
Oh, that.
That's their other big one, right?
Yes, that's kind of their flagship. It's like just the Stone Pale Ale.
The Stone IPA?
Or they do a Stone IPA.
They do a Stone IPA. It's weird because they do like a Stone IPA. They do a Stone Go-To IPA.
But they all have the same kind of hobgoblin horn.
Gargoyle.
The Gargoyle has been like their...
Yeah, that's their
logo.
Or a hobgoblin.
Or it's a gargoyle.
Where I come from, we call them hobgoblins.
Where I come from, we call them hobgoyles.
We call them gargoblins. Where I from. Yeah, it's a good beer. It's definitely got a really nice back end.
I love the color of it. It's got a beautiful, beautiful, deep, rich red to it. I like it.
Agreed, boys. Agreed. Well, back to our story. Rip goes straight from the warehouse, ambush. Doesn't call the cops.
You don't need to.
Straight to his fancy office.
He's handled it.
He's also still wearing the red and black unitard. or he may have changed into a fresh, identical...
Now he had that same outfit on for a while.
Identical black and red unitard after the warehouse fight. He's introduced to his new account executive, Samantha... Played by the seductive, sultry, and very often fully nude actress Joan Stevenson.
Yeah, she was in a lot of Skinamax pictures.
Man, she was a staple in late night TV. Red Shoe Diaries. The first time I saw her naked was in the Gene Wilder, Richard Pryor movie, See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
Yeah, I remember that.
One of my first real boob moments in the movie theater. Like, whoa.
Which also starred young Kevin Spacey.
Have you seen that?
Yeah.
I need to rewatch that movie. I really like that one as a youngster. But boy, she is a sex pot.
Good looking woman.
She kind of reminds me of the same mold as Linda Fiorentino that we did in Beyond the Law. Just rude, that voice.
Yeah.
And Houston Girl.
I believe right. Joan Severance was in Last Seduction Part 2, which Last Seduction was a Fiorentino movie.
She was in a lot of Part 2s. but I just always found her really sexy. I've always had a very non-thermosized boner for her, if you will. Well, she's taking Rip's boardroom by storm. She's challenging his employees that have worked for him. Who, by the way, don't they look like the guys just walked off the set of the boardroom of Secret of My Success and into this one? It's the same dudes. There's the bearded guy. There's the other guy. And they see. Hey, we need a
casting call.
We need 10 boardroom actors. Well, we've got the perfect boardroom crew. They're working on Secret of My Success down the lot. Let's get them over here.
I wonder if there's any time where, you know, the boardroom cast is gathered. Director comes on. Oh no, this won't work. But what are we going to do? Hey, they're shooting a boardroom scene over there on lot C. Bring them over.
There's a jury from L.A. Law shooting next door. Let's get her in there. 9 white dudes and 1 white chick. Let's get them.
Guess how Hogan though is paying no attention. He's just all.
Well, no. Not only is he doing that, he's like chewing on his finger and just making all these like monkey noise.
Well, that's his dialogue for the entire movie. Most is.
She wants Rip to expand his image to fitness wear. She wants to market the hell out of it. She's got all these ideas. He's impressed, but he doesn't verbalize it. Like we said, he just sits around chewing on his fingers and making these weird noises. At this point, did you think that Rip might be a unitard? Like, he might be kind of special? I mean, he really doesn't say anything.
He's special, all right. He kicked the limousine apart from inside it.
Well, Samantha's one tough cookie. And she tells Rip, she's like, "What are you laughing at over there?" Oh, because I called him a unitard? That's allowed. I didn't say the R word. But no, he's just... Come on, something's wrong with the guy.
Well, no, she's like, "Oh, do you have any thoughts?" And then all of a sudden, instead of...
No, actually, Samantha, my charity is all that's important to me. And blah, blah. She's like, "You know what, Rip? Tonight, dinner, 8 o'clock, I'm taking you to someplace fancy. We'll talk about it there." And he likes the challenge. You can tell he's like...
No, that's just an eyebrow. I just like the... All you've heard from this dude is like...
Actually,
that was the first time he turned on the...
My work with kids is what's important to me.
And we'll get to that charity later. Well, she also tells him he needs to dress classy for this restaurant. So he shows up to the fancy French restaurant in a unitard that's painted like a tuxedo. No, I'm just kidding. No,
he's got a full-on white leisure suit.
Man, the suit is white. Unbuttoned, of course. You know,
with his racist comments, it all makes 80s. Sense.
Did you see that?
He looked right at home in the Kentucky Derby in that thing.
It was a
here he is, Colonel Rip.
It's a seersucker suit.
Could I get a mint julep over here?
Mint julep.
I say, son, can I?
Well, it turns out because they have a very condescending...
Now the two most popular racist characters in history, Hulk Hogan and Foghorn Leghorn.
Well, it turns out there's a very condescending...
Damn
French
black
waiter.
Chickens are dating my daughter, I say.
They have a very condescending waiter, this French guy.
Oh, he's so stereotypical.
Perhaps you'd like a hamburger or a hot dog. So over the top. But it turns out, to Samantha's surprise... Hulk's Rip is a regular at the restaurant. He even orders his regular thing in French.
In the worst French, je suis.
Oui, oui.
But I tell you what, that waiter actually reminded me of an interaction I had with a frog once when I went to Las Vegas.
Give you a little attitude, did he?
Yeah, it was, okay, we don't have any soccer fans here, I know, but in 1998, France...
That's the thing where you kick the ball?
Yes. Okay. In 1998, France won the World Cup.
Called kickball.
In 99,
when I
went to Vegas and went to the Bellagio, and Manchester United had just won, they had won the English Soccer League, they had won the Champions League where they play the other teams from Europe, and they had just beaten the German team from Munich. I had a Manchester United jersey, and so we go up, check in the Bellagio. I guess this is all over Vegas, I haven't been in so long, but they have like their name where they're from, and right. He was Philippe from France. And he saw the Manchester United jersey, and he just kind of made some... Oh, Manchester United. He was same stereotypical. He was Manchester United.
Can I get you some spaghetti and a meatball?
And I was like, yeah, just won the Champions League. And he's like, well, you know we won the World Cup. And I was like, yeah, that was last summer. I'm talking about right now. But still, it was the World Cup. Like, Philippe, can you get somebody to carry these bags up to room 322, please?
I'll give you your mozzarella sticks.
I'll carry your baggage.
You arrogant American ass.
Arrogant American
ass. It was comical how cliched this guy was. But it turns out Rip knew the chef. He's friends with all the maitre d' and all that.
I just like, je suis Jean-Paul.
Well, he says the worst thing, whatever.
But doesn't the waiter, he's like, would you like a hamburger or a hot dog?
And when he orders, Samantha looks at Rip like, there might be something more to this guy. Maybe. There's something to this guy. They do a lot of shots of her like that where they zoom in on her watching Rip.
He does two words in French.
And she looks
I'm
like,
gonna fuck his brains
out. It looks
out.
Like she's watching like an animal take a dump at the zoo.
But like, he
does the whole, even like the dog, the head cock.
Yeah, she does the head cock. Like, he's speaking French, but a minute ago he was like,
Rip.
Now you notice he did not, after he ordered his meal, look at her and go,
didn't see that part.
Well,
see that. That was the director's cut.
We were doing a tour, and we flew into Charles de Gaulle in Paris, and we were going into Hungary. So we had a little layover.
Tuttle's world famous tour of war torn countries.
I tried to order in France or in French, and yeah. The lady was very nice, and she was like, "Oh,
it's like that scene from European Vacation."
She was like, "Oh, part of it."
I was thinking Latimer from Hudson Hawk. French fries.
No, I was thinking of that waiter from European Vacation. He's just completely cussing at Tuttle. Yeah. Tuttle's like, I like the fromage. Oh, you are a fucking asshole.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
She might have totally been that way, but she couldn't have been nicer.
Your girlfriend has great tits. Okay, just a little bit. Just a little brief.
Beautiful people, but the airport smelled like baby diapers.
Yeah. Actually,
like 12-year-old.
Actually, I had a layover around that same time, Tuttle, and there was an incident.
Well, between our impersonations and your foreign trips, I think we've offended the French for tonight.
I was the original ISIS.
The chemical warfare that he put on.
But she's thinking there might be something to this guy. And he kind of looks at her with that. He does that a lot.
There's more to me than meets the eye. Yeah. There's more to me, Samantha, than
you know,
meets
Samantha.
The eye.
It's like, he is an animal shitting at the zoo, but he wiped.
I'm not a Rhodes Scholar, Samantha, but I have feelings.
I did ride over a
scholar on the road.
I'm sorry, he's got a horrible delivery to every line he does. I'm not a animal, Samantha.
I thought he was good with his facial expressions. It's just when he spoke.
No. I agree. When they leave it to his face,
well, he's just like, you know,
he does some kind of shrugs.
I thought he like had that part down, but it was like once he actually had to deliver dialogue.
Yeah.
Might be why he only had like 20 lines.
At most. Well, across town at a sleazy bar, Brell and his two sidekick executives.
See, one point, man, because it ties in to that. Right when we go to the scene, did you guys notice that because of his inability to say lines, we leave them in the restaurant and we spend a long time away from him at this point?
Yeah. We don't come back. Yeah. No, he disappears from this film for a good while.
They're like, you know what? Kurt Fuller is actually an actor. Let's stay with him for about the next 20 minutes.
We don't see Rip for about a half hour. Which I always kept wondering, like, are these storylines going to ever intersect
come back?
Again?
Yeah.
Good point. At the sleazy bar, Brell and his two sidekicks, executives, are watching an underground wrestling match. I guess it's more in line with UFC early days. Just kind of bare knuckle, hair pulling, ear biting.
Can we talk about this bar?
Man, we've seen a lot of bars on this show.
I was about to say, if this was Florida, this was like California, where did they get the East Texas bar?
This was a combination of Tuttle's favorite watering hole in Lufkin, the bar from the first Porky's, and Bartertown from Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Good call with the Porky's.
Yeah.
The first one.
Yeah, the first
one. It also had a sprinkling of the Double Deuce in there. Early
Cody, did you get
did have a giant neon skull in the back.
Cody, did you get some Barter Town out of this place?
I did. I was expecting a dome to just like descend from the ceiling.
Tina Turner come walking out as a referee.
One
matches.
Man leaves.
Well, between the
spin the wheel, Raggedy Man.
Well, this crew,
they even had the midget up in the cage.
Well,
that's what gave me the bar. I was like, oh god, there's midgets in cages.
These two guys are just pummeling the shit out of each other in this crude wrestling ring. It's got like stacks of tires for pylons.
Yeah.
And as they're doing it, there's a sassy lounge waitress who's like hawking loogies, and she finally sits them down. They order like scotch and a dirty martini, and they're not getting that. Braille's like, give us some beers. It's fine. As they're watching this thing go down,
There's this beer-chugging midget up in a bird cage throwing peanuts at him. I just want
to be in there for that employee interview. I was like, all right, so basically your job is to sit in this cage all night and throw peanuts and heckle people.
Do you think...
You've got the worst job. Your job is to give the midget peanuts.
Would you ever consider bringing something like that into the pub?
No.
No.
Never.
What if we called it a little person in a birdcage throwing peanuts?
Could I squeeze myself into a cage and throw peanuts at the patrons?
That I will do.
Well, the two minions are dying.
Tiny
bless
cage.
You, brother.
The minions are dying. I call it his sidekicks. His
sycophants.
His little servant minion executives.
His smithers.
From yeah. Exactly. Mr. Burns Smithers. They're dying to get out of there, but Burrell thinks he's onto something. Speaking of chugging beers, I thought it was hilarious where one of the suits asks a bystander, where's the referee in all this? Because these guys are just killing each other. And the guy says, oh, the ref's over at the bar drinking beers. And they cut to the bar, and there's this dude in a wrinkled up referee shirt coming onto this bar skank just chugging beers.
And you were like, Mincy in 3 years.
I actually, it's right here in my notes.
You wrote 3 months.
Mincy style.
Completely the fact that my referee shirt would not be ironed.
I know you better than you know yourself, and you know me better than I know myself. Well, there's a funny...
Sad but warm in some way.
There's a funny...
Kind of like your underpants.
There's a funny as hell moment at the bar when the two minions go to take a whiz in the bathroom. They walk in just shuffling into this disgusting bath.
It is
urinals
so...
are filled up to the top with scum.
Oh, it's disgusting.
There's a random dog chained to the wall... barking at him.
Anybody ever go to a ball game at the old Arlington Stadium? Because it reminded me of the cans over there.
Oh, man.
Wait a second. It wasn't the old Arlington Stadium. I've been to some bathrooms like this in some places, and they captured it. Whenever Brell or these two guys are on screen, if you put them in a better movie with a better lead...
You could have made a whole movie about them.
Yeah.
Just WTN, The Rise and Fall, starring Kurt Fuller and David Paymer.
That scene with them in this bathroom, but basically, they play off each other so well, these two guys.
Yeah.
Anytime they're on screen time, I can't help but laugh. As they finally find a urinal that has some room left, and they start taking a whiz, and they start to talk shit about all the bar folks out there. And lo and behold, there's a big-ass drunk bar dude taking a dump in a stall who overhears them. So he kicks off the stall door, and he marches over to him, and he grabs them, and he's about to kick their ass. But then he looks down and he sees their teeny wangs.
You got teeny wangs.
It ain't even worth it. And he lets them go.
And you got a teeny wang too. Yeah.
Which thank goodness, because I thought he was going to put their faces into that
and
mug.
Yeah,
I was going to probably throw up.
I think. Yeah, I felt the bile rising.
He let them go because of their teeny wangs. Which, Todd, that's gotten you out of a lot of situations.
It really has. Yeah. It really has.
Especially on that Travis Tritt tour.
Oh, man. There's been so many bathrooms where Sea Bass has walked out and looked at me and goes, not even worth it.
No.
I've never been so thankful for genetics in all my life.
Well, the next morning, he wastes no time. Brell holds a news conference to announce that the World Television Network has his newest hit TV show coming up. What a name. Battle of the Tough Guys.
Battle of the Tough Guys. Bungie.
What should we name this? All right, we've got a bunch of tough guys. And they're going to be battling.
Battle of the Tough Guys?
Should we try to find something? No, Battle
That's
of the
what
Tough
That
guys.
Board of nine white guys and a girl came up with. Battle of the Tough Guys.
Burrell had to sign off on it.
But the thing is, in this movie, that's supposed to be a cool name.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not supposed to be a joke.
Battle of the Tough Guys.
Like I said, this is directed towards 13-year-olds, and 13-year-olds will be like, yeah!
Actually, maybe I can go back in the theater at 13. I'm like, sweet.
Battle of the Tough Guys.
This is going to be good.
I'm thinking, these guys are, what are they? Well, they're tough guys. That's what it is.
Yes.
It's a battle.
Well, that night, they go back to the shitty bar, and there's already a new neon sign outside that says, Battle of the Tough Guys. There's big spotlights, Hollywood-style.
Hey, Burrell started throwing that WTN money around.
And he looks up good.
They show up in their limousine, him and his two minions, and they're like, oh, nice. Well done. They go in, they settle in ringside, and they watch some really big dudes just start beating the crap out of each other.
Well, no, what I liked was the announcement when he was like, all right, we're going to have a battle of the tough guys, and the winner takes $100,000, and then did this montage of all these tough guys.
Tough guys, like a pool halls
and a truck driver, and yeah. These are so big.
One guy just randomly swinging a sledgehammer in a steel foundry.
Exactly.
He's not doing any work. He's just there to swing his hammer around.
I think his name was Sledgehammer.
Sledgehammer, yeah. Little sledgehammer, pipe wrench, torque wrench.
These guys all show up for the Battle of the Tough Guys. And everything seems to be going swimmingly. Good fights, a lot of blood. Until, out of nowhere, Zeus appears. Played by the one and only Tommy Tiny Lester.
One and only Tiny.
Tiny, man. Which is so funny because this movie kind of, I mean, it was his coming out. I mean, it was the one that put him on the map. And for the longest time, even though he was called Tiny, it wasn't until Friday, the movie Friday, that I actually started calling him Tiny.
He was
Zeus.
Because
prior to then, he was always Zeus. Yeah.
And we'll get in after the movie talk's done about how WWE tried to incorporate him a little bit. We'll get into that failed experiment.
Then you didn't see Tiny Lister a year or so earlier in the Eugene Levy, John Candy movie, Armed and Dangerous?
Yeah, you know, he's the guard. Yeah.
Oh, was he in that?
Yeah.
Thank God you admitted to seeing that as well.
I love that
I was
movie.
About to
well,
get my balls
I think,
broken.
I think most
it's
listeners
the
would...
reason why I went out and bought Assless Chaps.
Oh, yeah, that's the reason. I bought them just because it saved me a lot of time walking to my carpool in middle school.
It just made it so much easier. He took every pair of his stonewashed Levi's and just cut the asshole out of it. The cheeks were still there, just he had a hole so he could just shit what he needed to do.
We, of course, know him most. Most listeners will know him as Debo from Friday.
Debo, yeah.
He's also the president in Fifth Element.
Yes.
Correct?
Yeah.
Which was an interesting casting choice. Yeah. Which
It showed he could speak sentences.
It showed that he could put together sentences.
Right.
And given a chance, he could.
I like him as an actor. He's got such a cool presence.
Yeah.
Such a cool look to him. Such a cool voice.
Yeah.
I like him.
It was a really good call. Chris Tucker ruined that movie, but Zeus.
Right. Oh, sorry, that'll be the only time I do that.
Yeah, don't. he shows up.
Now I've just got Chris Tucker in Fifth Element.
He don't go there. He's wearing chains, Junkyard Dog style. He's got torn up.
He's got
denim,
like he's
jeans.
Got like a torn up prison shirt.
Yeah, he's straight out of prison.
Yeah.
He's not wearing a unitard, but he is wearing an intense unibrow.
Oh my goodness!
I couldn't tell if that was fake.
It had to have been fake.
But
man.
It was fake. How would they keep it glued for all? He was sweating so much,
and it wasn't even a full.
We were able to do that with There Will Be Steals for quite some time.
Well, no, you did wear a fake mustache, but
it was like
your forehead.
It was like a cheek. It was like a check mark, though. It wasn't even a complete all the way across
one
eye.
Oh, it was an intense
man.
Unibrow.
Oh,
you'll forget I was drinking heavily throughout the entire There Will Be Steals shoot,
and drinking through that mustache.
Yeah.
He also has Z shaved into the sides of his head, which was a big thing in the 80s.
Yeah.
He growls a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You think that the producers told him that, okay, we've got to make you somehow more subhuman than Rip, so you're going to have to growl more?
First thing he does is pick up a waitress by the face, lifts her, because he's up on this little ledge when he comes in, drops her down like two stories into a big barrel of peanuts. That's where the midget was getting his peanuts from. You know, he was pissed. And the peanuts just, she explodes like she's dead, maybe?
Yeah. But instantly solidifies his badassdom.
Yeah. And he then marches down to the octagon, and the ref asks Mr. Brell if Zeus can compete.
Let him fight.
Don't you love how this is a major network production? It's the same ref that was drinking at the bar the night before. They just ironed his shirt. It was the same dude.
We have to keep it authentic. We have to keep this authentic.
Do we want to bring in a real ref? No.
That guy's
in that voice.
He knows how to do this.
Yeah. What's his name? Mincy? John Mincy?
He's wearing the black and white striped shirt. He knows how to be
a ref.
Hey,
we don't have to buy his costume. He's already got a shirt.
Well, that was back in the day when, in wrestling, the refs didn't matter.
It's true.
They weren't supposed to be...
Yeah.
Authentic or whatever.
I just thought it funny.
Did I go to wrestling nerd there?
No, that could have been.
Isn't that the whole thing of the Battle of the Tough Guys? There won't be a referee
In the final one, the ref really had no purpose. But
one might say there were no holds barred.
Well, that term would go on into wrestling as describing that it became a no holds barred match.
Yeah.
It used to be a no disqualification.
Okay,
or no,
so that was the impetus for the no holds barred match.
This is where the no holds barred match in real in WWE got its name. It's like the only thing of substance that ever came out of
the
this
only
movie.
Legacy of the movie.
Anywho, Zeus does compete, and he demolishes the competition.
He demolishes everybody in it.
Brell's evil smile, we zoom in on him, lets us know that he's just discovered a new superstar.
Yeah, because Zeus just beat not only one, but three guys in this match.
He's
the two competitors that were fighting, and then like another guy that like jumped in.
At Rip's mansion, Rip and his buddies, his little brother Randy, his trainer, and some other guy, they're watching the Battle of the Tough Guys on TV. And Rip's trainer, this old black guy, reveals he used to train Zeus, but he couldn't handle him. And one night, Zeus killed a guy in the ring after the bell was over, and he went to prison.
So did anyone recognize the trainer, William Henderson?
No,
Boy, he looked familiar.
Anyone ever see the movie Clue?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He was the cop.
He was the cop in Clue.
Totally missed him. Yeah, I totally missed him.
Oh, no.
And probably a gazillion other things, but that's immediately where I remembered him from.
Boy, he looked familiar, but something else... But he has a very minimal role in this. It's not like Rocky's relationship with his trainer. It's
no.
He's got a few scenes. Well, after winning the ratings that night, the very next night, Brell moves the Battle of the Tough Guys to a steel factory, T2 style, where it's just random
sparks flying,
and
everywhere.
Guys with hammers, and where a new challenger is ready to take on the defending champion, Zeus. Only now, Zeus's torn-up prison denim outfit has been replaced. He got his own unitard. It's black and gray. It's got Zeus written on the legs.
Did he have the metal shoulder pads at that point?
No, that comes later. But the unitard makes him even more powerful. He dispenses this guy in no time.
It's far more better unitard.
He still hasn't said a word. It's just a lot of nonsensical. So much in this movie. It's just, I wonder if they use some of the same ADR, like for Rip and Zeus. Like, oh, we need some growls.
Probably, man.
Just put whatever in there.
I would love to see this movie edited without all the growls.
Well, if you watch this movie with the sound off, it just looked like a bunch of crazy people.
That's pretty much everybody's cheeks shaking.
I would hate to be a lip reader, like trying to like do this for an audience, like. How do you sign
ADR by Vince McMahon?
How do you sign language that?
I have no idea.
Well, the next day, Rip and Samantha are traveling out of town on some business, and they stop in at this little southern diner where he knows the owner. He's been here a bunch. He's now wearing a snazzy blue and white unitard, like baby blue and white, with corresponding do-rag, of course. The guy's got some amazing outfits in his
movie. Matches so well.
And he's got some really cool lace-up boots on. She's wearing a pink checkered blazer with the big Frankenstein shoulders.
It was the 80s, man.
Covering her ears. It's huge.
It was the 80s. Everybody had those shoulder pads.
It's very intense. Rip is noticed. I thought this was maybe good acting. If not, maybe this could go for Terry's defense. He's very chummy with all the black folks that own the restaurant.
Yeah.
Hugging them and... If it was acting, it came across very believable because he's hugging them, and it seems like they're...
Dude, they call cut, and he's like, oh, God, I gotta take a shower. Get off me.
He's not racist, man.
I believe that he was cool in these moments with these folks. I would have presented that at...
Yeah, exactly. Here's my movie.
Exhibit A, the waitress from
No Holds Barred. Exhibit A, the 1989 film No Holds Barred.
Yeah, he was all right. But anyway... he didn't drop any N-bombs, which is
nice.
No.
Well, if you
again, maybe there's a director's cut.
If you didn't recognize the waitress...
All right, lay it on me.
Sadie?
Yeah.
Action Jackson?
Who was she in Action Jackson?
D.
Go on.
She was the hairdresser that gave him all the information. Carl Weathers.
I thought I recognized her from somewhere besides that.
I do love Action Jackson.
One of my favorites.
Oh.
Craig T. Nelson? Come on.
She just died. Well, what the hot main chick from Action Jackson? The singer.
Oh, Vanity. Yes.
Vanity just passed away. We didn't do a boot of remembrance for Vanity. We should have. She's awesome.
Yeah.
But anyway, they're here and they're eating a bunch of fried food that Samantha's, you know, not feeling. But suddenly, three armed robbers enter the place.
Guns.
Heavily armed. Yeah, guns pointed
at
people.
It's kind of almost an overkill to rob this tiny
at lunch
diner.
At lunch hour.
I mean...
Well, Rip tells Samantha, when I move, hit the deck. And then he moves, like...
No, he doesn't say it.
when I move, hit the deck.
Samantha, when I move, I encourage you to hit the deck.
He grabs a bar, a stool, knocks one guy out with it. The other...
And then it turns into a pie fight.
That's the thing that I like.
He starts throwing... They have a countertop of pies lined up, and he starts grabbing them and throwing them at the robbers.
And the guy's got a gun.
He's got a gun in his hand, and it takes Rip a while to get to the next pie. He's wiping the icing.
Oh, you blinded me with this pie. I can't shoot you. I can't see.
Oh, key lime.
Bane of my existence.
It's a ridiculous fight.
Oh, it's so horrible.
Lenny? My eye. The doctor said not to get any pie in it.
Well, he throws at least a dozen pies at these guys. And was it just me? Or was
comically,
he,
just...
Was it just me, or was Rip... Was he oiled up in the scene?
He was.
He was.
Like, he is, like, glistening. He's oiled
up. He's a wrestler.
Not sweat. He's oiled up. Like, did he do that, like, in between pies?
Oh, I'm starting to dry out over here. Got to keep the moisture in.
That's how he stays so young. He moisturizes. Well, also, did you notice the song playing in the scene?
Yeah, it was
All My Rowdy Friends.
Yeah, All My
Hank
Rowdy
Williams
Friends
Jr.
Yes.
The same year, 89, that they started using it on Monday Night. It came out in 81.
Oh, man, why did you have to talk about Obama, man? I miss Monday Night Football with Hank.
Another another repercussion of be careful what you say.
Yeah.
We don't get Hank Williams Jr. anymore. Who do we get? Faith Hill or
Now it's Carrie Underwood. It was Faith Hill and then they've switched her.
She's not drunk. Faith Hill did not drop N-bombs, though.
No.
Okay. Remember on Last Boy Scout, it was Bill Medley of the Righteous Brothers? Friday night's a good night for football. The Colts and the Stallions.
We got the Stallions and the Colts.
I do miss Hank Williams Jr., but... yeah, but that song was playing. But anyway, he wipes them all out. Needless to say, Samantha is impressed with his heroics. And we can tell because, once again, they do that slow zoom in... On
she's
her kind of cocking her head at him, like,
I was just waiting for, like, a pie to slam into her face. Like, classic, like,
oh, that would have been so good. He throws a pie at her face.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I got turned around.
Samantha, in every battle, there's collateral damage.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, Samantha.
I'm sorry, Samantha.
I cannot overemphasize how the character of Hulk Hogan, but he never talks like that in the entire movie.
No.
It's just, no, I am cerebral in this movie.
That pumpkin pie was meant
just
for...
Just giving him like an English accent. Samantha, I'm terribly sorry about the pie.
Might as well have.
I may as well get back to my bench pressing enormous amounts of weight. If you notice, I took out 3 armed robbers with a stool and a menagerie of pies.
Well, she's clearly starting to... build some interest in him, and maybe she's a little horny. We'll see. We'll see. It's unclear at this point. I sensed a little horniness. That night, they get to their hotel, and...
Do you want to take a shot of that?
I got a minute here.
Okay.
And damn it, they only booked one room instead of 2 hotel rooms.
Oh, why?
Not only one room, but one bed.
It should have at least 2 twin beds.
So now the director thinks we're doing a lot of good stuff action-wise here, but I think we can go Frank Capra-esque, Clark Gable and Claudette Colbert with It Happened One Night. We'll just divide the room.
Well, these actors are so good. Hulk is such a good actor. We can pull off some comedy here with these two. Boy, you cannot. While she's, upset about the room situation, she goes in to brush her teeth.
Not upset enough to drop down to her bra and panties.
No, she's not. While she's in there, he gets his wrestling tape out of his bag and draws a line in the middle of the room and hangs a sheet.
By the way, he switched to his evening wear now of a neon orange tank top and really short orange shorts.
It's lingerie. It's male lingerie. When she pokes her head out after brushing her teeth, she sees him bent over a suitcase and his butt cheeks are drooping out of the bottom of his... And she's kind of aroused.
Shorty shorts.
Yes, but he gives that look because they cut to his face and he's like, hey. Uh-oh. Oops.
And I should mention this. She's so upset about the room situation. She does emerge from the bathroom wearing nothing but bra and panties.
Yeah.
I mean...
With that look that he had on his face, I looked at... It's Hulk Hogan doing the... Jim Carrey from Dumb and Dumber when he's at the bar putting out the vibe. He's got his butt stuck towards her and is looking back over his shoulder like,
But dude, it's just very rare in a movie that you see a woman look
I mean, his muscly butt cheeks are hanging out of these short shorts. Maybe I should write for Red Shoe Diaries.
The muscly butt cheeks.
Are you saying they weren't muscly butt cheeks?
I didn't say that they weren't, but I'm just saying if you're going to refer to them as muscly butt cheeks.
They're quite muscly. And they were tan as hell, too. How does that happen? Well, there was no tan lines.
No, those don't.
Do you think he has tan lines? Of course not.
Oh. Well, she wakes up soon. They go to bed on their separate sides of the sheet. And she wakes up to the bed squeaking.
It's rocking up and down like a Viking ship in a tidal wave.
She's like, oh my God, did he go down to the hotel bar and bring up one of his groupies up here?
I thought she thought maybe he was just jerking it. He was just pounding that thermosized cock up and down in the bed.
Two-hander.
Yeah, he's just...
That's true. Well, it turns out she peeks over and she sees these two smooth... very smooth, tight butt cheeks thrusting up and down.
The short orange shorts have been removed. He is now in an orange male stripper thong.
Yes, but when she looks over the sheet, she just sees these two nude, seemingly butt cheeks going up and down. And she's like, oh. But then she peeks a little higher. It turns out those are hit the bottom of his feet. Those are his heels, not his butt cheeks. And he's doing his push-ups. Every night he does 10,000 push-ups.
The fastest push-ups.
Kate style. Kate's,
In his orange, neon orange thong.
In a
his
thong. It's a banana hammock.
Doesn't he say to her, don't wait up for me.
A thermos hammock, I guess.
A thermos hammock.
His lunchbox.
You gotta hold the thermos.
Well, when he's finally done exercising, he plops down on the bed, smashing it to pieces. It just completely breaks under... This guy's... He's a huge dude.
He is.
He's billed as being 6'8". And at the prime of his wrestling, he was basically 320.
Which, did yeah, he really probably, look that tall?
No, he was probably about 6'6".
Because Fuller is actually pretty tall.
Yeah, but he was taller than Fuller.
Noticeably? Several inches taller?
Yeah, he was probably about 3 inches taller.
Fuller
than
looked like he's maybe my height.
Yeah.
Fuller was, I think they said that he was 6'3".
I can see 6'6".
6'6", yeah.
Now,
because I know, like, Undertaker and Kane, they're closing in on that 7 foot mark.
Zeus, they said, was 6'5".
A little taller.
All right. Well, the bed collapses, and it sends Sam flying over into his arms. She thinks he did it on purpose, and when she declares that she's not one of his floozy groupies, his feelings are genuinely hurt, and he mumbles some nonsense about,
Samantha, you build up bigger walls between us than I ever could.
Or something like that.
No, the sheet that he hung up, you build up bigger walls than this.
And he storms off. He doesn't stop in the doorway and give her the
rip.
No, he gives her one line. Ripple.
There's a couch down in the lobby that has a better sense of humor than you.
But he basically walks
there's
out.
A couch
I'm leaving
down
this room
in
my tiny
poke.
I'm walking down the lobby wearing these tiny...
my banana hammock.
My thermos hammock. And like you said, the couch downstairs has a better sense of humor than you.
Ripple. You build bigger walls than this sheet. Ripple.
Well, in a surprising twist, we then immediately cut to Samantha in Brell's office.
Yeah.
At the World Television Network building.
It's a trap!
Turncoat bitch.
She's furious because he hired her to seduce Rip, and now she's in love with him. She pleads with Bro to leave him alone, leave Rip alone. He's a really nice guy. I eat nice guys for breakfast! And then he slaps the shit out of her.
Yeah, he does.
Sends her tumbling over a chair. She falls to the ground, scrambles out of the room as him and his two minions start chasing her. And
what were they going to do if they caught her? I just...
Well, again, she doesn't call the cops after that assault.
Yeah.
Nobody's calling the cops in this movie. She instead races over to Rip's house to ask for forgiveness. He stares into her eyes, and there's a moment here that's actually pretty decent acting. He kind of stares at her eyes and kind of judges whether she's being sincere or not. No, he doesn't say anything. And then he whispers that...
Samantha... Indeed, I do forgive you.
Would have been better if he had said, forgiveness comes in a thermos.
Ripple. Drink up. Ripple.
Oh, man. I wish I forgave that easily. No, I did. The look in his face as he judged whether to forgive her, it was a pretty big lie she told him. I don't know. I hold on to resentment and anger a lot. and I wish
that would have been the time to slam a pie in her face.
Everyone's got to pay the piper.
I've been saving Samantha. I've been saving this coconut cream pie since Alabama. Open
coconut
wide.
Cream, no.
I'm just always jealous when people, fictional or not, can forgive so easily. I wish I could. It's a character flaw of mine. I don't forgive very easily.
Well, you and I are very alike, are we not, after all these decades? I don't forgive that easily myself. If you've wronged me, I have a hard time.
I wish I did.
I know the Christian way is forgive and forget.
Yeah, and I respect it, and I admire it, but I just can't do it as much as I would like.
I think eventually, over time, I can forgive, but I never really forget if you've wronged me.
That's me. I don't forgive or forget.
What, did this just turn into Festivus? I got a lot of problems with you people.
No, you guys are okay.
I got a lot of problems with these people.
Actually, two out of the three of you guys are okay.
Ripple.
Anywho.
Is he talking about me or you?
Did y'all notice when he was cradling?
I thought we were both okay.
I'll leave you guys to figure that out. No, you're all fine. I love you all.
Did you guys notice when he reaches up to cradle her hand because she's very upset and she already has a giant bruise? His fucking hand is bigger than her entire head.
Yes.
He's a big man.
Another trivia was that was how he got the name Hulk. He did an interview.
Well, I always figured it was because he was
was gigantic.
He did an interview with can't remember what it was, but it was him and Lou Ferrigno side by side.
Yeah,
and the interviewer commented that Hogan was bigger than Ferrigno, who at the time was playing the Hulk.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Hulk.
I actually did not know that. Okay.
You know what, Cody? I changed that. I'm okay with three out of three.
Good point. He was talking about Cody.
Good point.
Good deal.
Back on board, buddy. Back on board.
Where's my lemon meringue pie?
Where's my staple gun? God, you won't forgive me for that?
You really are a bitter bastard.
You can't forgive anyone.
You really are a bitter bastard.
Oh, I'm teased. No, it's just when you see him in perspective to other things sometimes.
Oh, no.
You just realize
how
huge he is.
He's fucking giant.
I did not realize he was that tall till I read that at one point he had claimed to be 6'8 or someone. I just didn't realize he was that tall.
Yeah, he's a big dude. I mean, hell, to body slam Andre the Giant, you would just need...
Well, and therein lies the thing. Look at him if you go back and look at that footage, WrestleMania and things like that. Look how big he was in comparison to Andre the Giant. Yeah. Andre the Giant was what, 7'2" or whatever,
and 500 pounds.
Yeah. Hogan looks tiny next to him.
Yeah,
but I mean, and, even take like Andre the Giant and the most notable thing, Princess Bride, in comparison to the other actors, Mandy Patinkin, John Wallace,
Warwick Davis.
He wasn't Princess Bride.
Oh. He's actually 5'7". I never saw Princess Bride.
Why do I even talk about movies with you sometimes?
That's the one, Billy Crystal and the big guy?
Yes.
I thought that was
Carrie Elves.
I thought that
you?
Was my giant or my.
You like Carrie? No, you like Carrie Elves, right?
Yes, my giant
was Carrie Ewells.
It's Elves. That's how it's pronounced.
Billy Crystal was in Princess Bride too. Miracle Matt? What?
Robin,
we're not going to talk about it anymore.
Robin Wright Penn.
No, I'm with you, Cody. I'm with you, Matt.
Yes. All right.
I'm with you. It's also got the dude from Psych. The guy, Wesley, the guy who played Wesley, played Thibodeau or whatever his name was.
Next thing you know, they tumble clumsily together on the couch, hurt Samantha and Rip, where he tickles her for a bit, kind of childlike, like... You expect him to immediately pull her in.
I'm a gentle giant.
No, he starts tickling her.
But isn't that the scene where he also has the jeans tucked into his boots?
It's a good look. It's a good look.
But no, he just
not for a man.
Tickling her with those big sausage fingers. And
they work for Jack Burton.
They do start to...
Those are moccasin boots. Yeah. Completely different.
Right. They start to kiss. They have a few smooches there on the couch. But then they fell on the remote, so the TV pops on.
Did anybody else, just for whatever reason, it was, really awkward watching Hogan make out?
Yes.
I was like, God, this is not... It was...
Well, then I advise you not to watch the Gawker sex tape. If this was awkward for you...
Awkward is a good word for it, man.
Well, they just get to a few smooches. There's no thermos
like
involved.
I can follow it through with, do you like lunch boxes? I've got a thermos for you.
It's what's for dinner. Samantha, it's what's for dinner.
Samantha, I have a thermos in my knickers.
Samantha.
In my knickers. Hey, he doesn't. Oh, knickers.
Knickers. Knickers. The pants.
Sorry. Sorry. I was going to say, he's good. He's behaving in this one. No, but they fall down on the remote. And
that's not shepherd's pie in my drawers. Oh, here's a shepherd's pie.
He's throwing pies in everybody's face. No, but the TV comes on, and it's the World Television Network, and it's a Battle of the Tough Guys special, and it's Zeus challenging Rip to a fight to see who's the real world champion. And they zoom in on Rip's eyes. He's into it. The gauntlet has been finally dropped. Zeus has challenged him. Real quick, I'm about to drop this lovely cigar into this.
Oh, God, you said you were about to drop something, and we already heard
I'm past that stage. Well,
about to drop my underage whitey-tighty drawers.
I'm about to drop this cigar into the stinky ashtray. Thumbs up from me. Everybody else?
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yep. I think we all agreed that...
I would just definitely pair it with a different beer.
Yeah.
Arrogant Bastard is very tasty, but it's far too powerful.
What do you think about their recommendation of bourbon or scotch with it? I think bourbon
it really
might be a bit
it,
much.
If
I'm
going to
go the two, I would try it with some scotch.
Yeah.
It depends scotch, on how scotch, smooth it scotch is. Tends to leave you a little bit sooner after you sip. It's got the bite and it's... You're done with it?
I'm not sure if I would go bourbon or scotch, but if you go like a sweeter Irish whiskey, I can kind of see that.
Possibly. I'm going to go with Tut's suggestion.
With the coffee?
This is a summer cigar and definitely, you know, a lighter beer, lager or something along those lines. Pilsner.
I was actually kind of thinking about that, to where it's actually a testament to the cigar that despite the pairing and the overpowering of the hops and the Arrogant Bastard, it's still you could taste the good of the cigar.
Yeah.
I mean, you could taste the flavor of it.
It wasn't pushed around to where it disappeared under the weight of the beer at all.
Kate, I could see it with a really good scotch, drinking a little glass of neat scotch with that.
I could also, just for whatever reason lately, I've been drinking a lot of red wine with my stogies.
Yeah.
And I could see with like a Pinot, something a little less sweet.
Yeah, dry cab.
A dry cab. Yeah. I could see it maybe being really good with that, too.
Okay.
I know wines get a really bad rep for pairing with cigars.
Oh, no.
Just as far as, you know, like this, they can tend to overpower. It's hard to get that off your palate, the wine, to really appreciate the cigar, but I don't think so. I love smoking with red wine.
I drink a lot of dry wines, like, because I cook with a lot of dry.
I'm cooking while drinking dry wine.
Yeah, I can see it. That pot of mac and cheese boils up real good. Throw a little Malbec in there. Malbec you mentioned. I like Bordeaux. I mean, you're talking heartier wine that you have with the red meat, but I think that there's kind of a lack of an aftertaste.
Right.
It's just it has an immediate hit. I could see a Bordeaux or Malbec. After you had a steak, working good with a LaGuardia Cubana.
Yeah.
I'm going to revisit it, for sure.
That's interesting, because I don't think we've really had that kind of... we've all had a consensus before, but I don't think we've had that one, which was we were able to...
Look past the
say beer. We like the beer and like the cigar, but together they don't make a great match. I don't think we've ever really had that kind of...
Not this clearly defined, we like this, but... Boy,
yeah,
not together.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, it's a new one. So yeah, seek it out.
Yeah, because I do like the Arrogant Bastard quite a bit. Like I said, Stone's one of the. There's only been a few Stone offerings that I haven't liked. So they're a good brewery. They put out good product. Yeah, check it out.
For $7 on the cigar, I think you definitely got the value for your dollar out of that. Absolutely,
I agree.
Yeah, price to sell. Yeah. Big time. Cameron, we're good?
Let me double check.
Okay. Let's let Tut double check our camera real quick. I will say I just lit up an Undercrown Corona Viva. Much spicier and much more fuller smoke than what we had. I'm curious to see
I'm curious to see how that pairs with the bastard. We did that a lot on the last show, the Guinness episode.
Yep.
Or two, I guess you'll be hearing this two episodes ago, where we just started playing with cigars and trying to find something that went with Guinness.
The Guinness Nitro.
And that was kind of fun, too, because we were like, the pairing was not working. We did not like the beer. But it was helped when we switched over to a different cigar.
Yeah, yeah.
The beer was still kind
of weird. Yeah, I asked you about the Nitro IPA, and you did not give me a glowing recommendation.
Nancy was at the grocery store, and he was like, hey, I was thinking about picking this up. I know you guys did on the show. I was like, no.
So that different from just a regular Guinness, then?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Apples and oranges. Yeah.
Okay.
I think one of our listeners, Brooke, said on Instagram or Twitter that, so what I get from that episode is, if I love Guinness, I'll hate, or if I love IPAs, yeah. I will not like the Guinness IPA. It's like, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
I wanted to go a little step further. If you like good beer, you won't like the Guinness Nitro IPA, but hey, there's something out there for everybody.
Yeah.
Well, the next day at a kid's, so Zeus has challenged Rip to a fight, and we cut to the next day at a charity function cleverly titled Rip Sports for Kids. Who's writing this?
They didn't spend a lot of time thinking
Battle
of
the Tough Guys. Rip Sports for Kids. Nothing couldn't come up with anything else. What about just Rip's Kids?
But then are they Rip's Kids?
If I was the marketing guy, I would say
some of them might be.
Rip's, well, you never know. Who knows where that hose is spraying. Well, Rip's...
That's another reason why I don't think he's racist, because he held up a black kid really just with the white kid.
I was going to say, he looks very affectionate towards the...
Again, we don't know what happened when they called cut.
The black kid.
Get him off me. Drop kicked him.
No, I refuse to believe it. I'm still a Hulkamaniac. I'm still a Hulkamaniac.
I couldn't help but watch every scene he was in with an African-American actor, and it did seem genuine. He seemed really happy and comfortable. But what he says in that tape is pretty cut and dry.
Here's one thing.
He was a closet racist. He was okay until black guys started racist.
Well, here's one thing I'm weird, because you know that locker room's got to be... That locker room's got to expose every character flaw.
But you don't think that Hulk had a VIP locker just to himself? You think he was in there showering with Junkyard Dog and Coco Beware? And
I want to know what Junkyard Dog and Coco Beware think.
I was going to say, I want to know what they look like in the shower.
Junkyard Dog.
Do they have thermos penises?
Why do you think I named my song Grab Them Cakes? It's all about Hulk.
I don't know. I would like to believe, as you do, that it was just a moment of, we all say stupid stuff when we just got done banging our best friend's wife.
It's all. I thought you were about to say it's all fun and games to one date your daughter.
No, I wasn't going to say that at all.
Oh, okay.
I'm not racist.
I don't know, man.
If the young man enjoys a stogie and...
I'd have to listen to the tape. I don't need to see it. I'd have to listen to it. I don't know, man.
It's obvious.
I think that's something you can closet for a long time.
Yeah,
it could be. It very well could be, man. It's
my
weird.
My litmus test for the young man dating my daughter is, how do you feel about IPAs? Because I'm an IPA guy. If he's like, oh, God, bitterness. I'm like,
what's an IPA?
Go date Tut's daughter.
You know what? This guy down the road.
Katie's Tut. Like, but Dad, he's a pre-law student. You said he was smart, intelligent, and he treats me nice. Yeah, but Katie doesn't like IPAs.
I don't like IPAs.
Go date Tut.
She's not going to say go date Tut.
I saw him drinking.
You'll be 50-something at that time. Go date Tut. What?
I saw the young man chugging a Guinness Nitro IPA for courage out in the driveway.
Oh, goodness. She's like, Dad, I'm just going to tell you.
I'm just saying that this has rocked my world.
Colin here is a pre-med student. He's a Chicago Bears fan. He's got a lot of things going for him. But earlier I saw
he's a unitard.
But earlier I saw him drinking a Steel Reserve. You're all,
son,
Papa. No, at that point I'm just so lit I think he's my son. Well, he's holding up these kids.
You're all winners.
Because back at that time, you got to realize that Hulk, as the WWE Hulk Hogan, was all about kids, all about
take your vitamins, say
your prayers.
I was gonna say, take your vitamins, drink your beers. He never said that.
Take your Hulkamaniac vitamins.
If you want a thermos-sized cock like me, take your vitamins.
Drink your beers.
Rip. Rip, ripple.
But you know, he said earlier the charity was his everything, and he certainly seems happy surrounded by these kids.
Till one of them threw their fucking underpants at him.
But I will say, I think there was only
one. It did not happen.
But I will say, I think there was only one black child in that audience.
I didn't look.
It was a very white audience.
Well, he had the one, and he was holding them.
Yeah.
That's something. Well, all of a sudden, like, Commando.
Terry, hold the black child, hold the black
and
child.
If you notice, it even cut to the Commando music as the helicopter approached over the trees. And they all look up, and this black helicopter lands. What'd you do, smell it?
I've got to go get my coconut oil from the shed.
Dude, guys, like,
the wind is drying me out.
We all want to get Samantha back, right?
For the podcast. For the podcast, Cody and Matt are rubbing themselves with their coconut oil.
Oh, he's covered in it.
Getting so shiny.
Well, those helicopter blades would dry you out like a motherfucker.
Yes, they would.
Well, Rip stands his ground stoically as Brell and Zeus emerge from the helicopter and approach him.
Now, I will say, I do love the audio in this scene because it's the classic slow-mo. The helicopter blades are... That's a... Wait.
He's got his arms just... He can't throw them down.
His arms are like at a 45-degree angle.
Well, he's got massive lead.
But it's a slow-mo walking away from the helicopter, and the blades are going real slow-mo, so you hear the...
Whoa. Whoa.
Well... A complimentary thing to the filmmaking. Ooh. We haven't gotten that yet.
It was actually pretty
good. You say it was Apocalypse Now-esque?
Yeah, kind of.
Well, this is the end.
This was the end.
I love the smell of coconut oil on a body.
You're in luck, brother.
You smell that? Nothing smells like lemon meringue in the morning.
WWE and Banana Boat Films present. Well, they issue a face-to-face challenge to Rip. Are we going to do this fight or what? And Rip stands his ground. He says nothing at all. So Brell raises Zeus's hand and announces him the true world champion. In front of, they have the World Television Network cameras there, of course. They're
do you
always,
think he was supposed to deliver a monologue and just blanked on it?
He might have.
He's frozen. Terry.
Meanwhile, all the sad, dejected Tuttle kids are out there.
Those kids were just looking for Rip to do something.
Why didn't you do anything?
Well, that night, Rip's trainer assures him he did the right thing.
That's right.
By refusing to fight Zeus, those kids at Rip's Sports for Kids. They should have just called them Rip's Kids, but do it with a Z. R-I-P-Z, Kid-Z. I should be in marketing. That's $1 million thing right there.
The Z thing didn't really kick in until the mid-2000s.
He says those kids were looking to you to do the right thing, and you did the right thing. So he made Rip feel a little bit
by
better.
Not standing up for yourself.
Showed him how to be a pussy.
By letting that guy walk all over your thermosized
dong.
Taught
these kids how life is going to work.
You've got a thermosized dong. Act like it. No, he doesn't say that.
Didn't he?
he kind of did. Well, the next morning, as Samantha arrives at work, she's assaulted in the parking lot by one of Brell's thugs. He throws her down on the ground in the middle of this parking garage, and just as he's about to seemingly rape her,
it looked like a rape.
He's kind of got her legs spread. He's about to rape her. Rip shows up on his motorcycle, wearing this blue vinyl jacket with a severed arm on the back, doing the rip. It just says "rip him." It's just this arm on the back doing the sentence.
He ripped it off the limo driver.
You want the Kurt Russell moccasin boots from Big Trouble Little China? I want that rip him jacket. I would wear it every day for the rest of my life.
I got to get those moccasin boots because I bought the Jack Burton tank top.
Yeah. Oh, nice, nice.
Well, he chases the guy down.
Need a lift.
He throws him on the front of the motorcycle and then hits the brakes outside and launches him into a tree. Once again, does not call the cops to get this guy arrested.
Oh, yeah, because for potential rape? No reason
to call the cops.
He saved him into a tree. It's been handled.
Just like when he was ambushed by them and when Sam was slapped by... No cops involved whatsoever. Well, across town, Rip's little brother, Randy, and his buddy
Wait, was this? Did Samantha go back to Rip's house first?
No, we don't see her for a while.
Okay, because there was a scene where Rip's comforting Samantha, and he was, "I hate to see you hurt, Samantha." It was the worst.
I may have blocked that out.
Oh, so you should, because it was so damn bad. He's got Samantha cradled, and she's just about. I mean, she's just.
That's in the parking garage during that scene.
Yeah, she's just basically been assaulted, and he's got her cradled.
He's also wearing jeans tucked into boots.
I'm.
She's all, call the cops. Rip holds court on the street.
I'm so sorry, Samantha. I just hate to see you hurt.
And then he shoved that pie in her face.
It was so horrible. It was so horrible.
It's pecan, brother.
Rip. She's like, God damn, now is not the time.
Drink from the thermos.
Well, across town, Rip's little brother Randy and his buddy, they decide, unwisely, to attend a live taping of Battle of the Tough Guys. They want to see Zeus, what he does up close and personal. After Zeus's quick victory...
over Lugwrench.
That was Lugwrench, yeah.
Lugwrench is a guy with arm,
a big Lugwrench.
Like, Lugwrench holds up his arm, and the tricep on that dude is bigger than my thigh.
Oh, dude, it's like a fucking honey-baked ham.
Well, do you know who Lugwrench is?
Holy shit.
No.
That was Jeep Swinson.
Oh, really? The fucking dude that played from
Bane.
Bane from
Batman and Robin.
From the early Batman series. Okay.
If you remember the dude in it was, was it 97 or 96?
Yeah, 97.
That dude was huge.
No, Jeep Swinson. Todd's right, though, dude. He had like a fucking Christmas turkey under his arm.
He actually died right after Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't know that was him.
From shame.
From just pure shame.
All I know is that was just... That's a big dude, man. I looked at that arm and I was like, holy crap.
No, he had Kate-esque triceps. I'll give him that.
Not what I can.
Did you just work in?
No, you said that. To our listeners, Cody, you said that.
No, Cody,
no,
did not.
You feel good. Kate is a man with big arms. They were not Jeep Swinson arms. You're going to win a bicep competition with anybody here.
Well, in my defense, his name is Jeep. He's named after a very large vehicle.
Well,
I went by the nickname Pinto Menzi back in college for a while.
It was almost the size of my thermos piece.
You hung out with Pacer Leshker a little bit, didn't you?
P squared.
A lot of pie throw those eggs.
Hell yeah.
Well, when Zeus defeats Lugwrench, the crowd, he starts going crazy, and the crowd just starts running for their lives. And Randy, Rip's little brother, and his buddy start running out, and they run right into Brell and his two minions that are coming out of the production van they've been watching on monitors. And they're like, oh, because they've got their Rip'em t-shirts that they unwisely wore to this thing. He's like, Brell's like, oh, some Rip fans converted to Zeus. I love it. And Randy's little loudmouth friend's like, he's not a Zeus fan. This is Rip's brother.
Which, what an idiot. Wouldn't you have been like, oh, we converted some Rip fans. You'd have been like, yeah, man, go Zeus. We need to run the fuck out.
Zeus.
No, they give him the
Rip'em.
And they just proceed to get security to kidnap them. Again, no cops are called. And drag them over to Zeus.
You get the feeling that Randy's friend, like, no matter, in every bad situation, like, you know who this guy is? Oh, God.
Shut up.
We all know who that guy is.
What are you looking at me for?
Well, they drag him over to Zeus, and like a second later,
this is Pinto Menzi's brother.
Seconds later, Randy is on the ground, unconscious, bleeding from his ears. Zeus just almost kills him.
And somehow quadriplegic all of a sudden.
And paralyzes
him. Well, he does that neck.
That
chop.
Yeah,
thing.
We just chop down on the guy's neck until it snaps.
I guess that could do it.
Well,
which again amazes me about the horrible action sequences of their fight scenes. They are just nothing but punches and shoves. Mm-hmm. Come on, WWE.
Seriously, you can
maybe
do better.
They cannot afford the stuntmen.
Well, Rip.
Actually, who are you going to get to the stuntman Zeus?
Yeah. Rip gets word of what happened to Randy.
Refrigerator Perry.
He shows up at Zeus's gym. He kicks down the door. The place is, the gym has TVs all over the place with Brell's face on it, like Clockwork Orange. It's like Gold's Gym from the 80s mixed with Clockwork Orange. He's like over and over repeating to Zeus, like,
Rip doesn't respect you. He doesn't think you're good enough to eat worms.
It just repeats it over and over. So while Zeus is exercising, he gets this brainwashed anti-Rip message into his brain. And Rip just starts tearing the place apart, throwing dumbbells through walls, ripping up the mat.
They're back there laughing at him.
And they're in their, in the headquarters watching him on monitors. But then he goes into this back hall of mirrors where
this
they
is the worst.
So bad.
This is the worst.
It's kind of like that scene in Conan where he goes into
the
hall of
mirrors. Well, that's what they were trying to
do. But it's literally just one Zeus projected.
But it's not projected. You can actually tell that's Zeus standing there.
You can
there.
Tell it's a fake Zeus.
No, it's not a fake Zeus. That's actually Zeus standing there.
Oh, it looks fake
with
Zeus.
Yeah, no, it looked to fake,
me,
man.
To me, I
thought
like,
it was fake.
Yeah, no, to me, fake. I was like, that's it Zeus like a cardboard standing
cut.
There.
It looked like Cade's tombstone cut out of Kurt Russell.
Ripple.
But anyway, he thinks it's Zeus, so he throws a dumbbell at him, and it breaks the mirror. It turns out it's a projector back there. They've really put some Jack Palance, Tango and Cash style thought into this. Oh, that was another Hall of Mirrors.
Yeah.
The end of Tango and Cash. But anyway.
These guys love their mirrors.
Brell pipes
Rip
in on the internet.
Samantha and Rich. Two rats caught
now,
in my
Now
gym.
If Brell is like, you know what? All right, you two go out. Find me a giant bar with a maze in it that I can put a rat into. I feel powerful.
I'm going to need an escape-proof limousine, some on-call thugs who live 24-7 in a parking garage, and I'm going to need a hall of mirrors.
I'm the director of the World Television Network.
Exactly. Boy's got sway, man.
He's Ted Turner gone wild.
Well, but then he pipes in on the intercom, kind of like Richard Dawson in Running Man. Where he's like, you fight Zeus, and... as soon as, you know, I want you to, or your life's about to get really difficult. And, you know, like, Arnold grabs the camera, is like,
yeah.
Shut up your goddamn spine. Hogan, Rip picks up a barbell and javelin throws it. And they show this cool.
This little slow-mo of it
goes right through the camera.
Of the video camera, and you see the slow motion as the barbell goes into it. That's horrible.
It reminded me of Children of the Corn 2 when that corn stalk comes up at the beginning and spears one of those cameramen. Yeah.
But I will say that...
as much as I love that movie, you don't want to say anything that reminds you of Children of the Corn 2.
No, you don't.
It's interesting that you referenced Richard Dawkins, because as good as Brell was, I was thinking, man, if Richard's character was this character here, that'd be a cool character.
Oh, Richard Dawson had played
Brell? Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great. He should have played way more evil bad guys in 80s movies.
I agree.
Although I kind of like that he just did.
That's what was so genius about it. He hadn't done anything. He was the Family Feud host. It was such a great casting call.
He just enjoyed groping people on his game show.
Yeah.
That's what was great about Running Man. It was like, Richard Dawson, the Family Feud host? Brilliant. It was like, he's fucking fantastic. Yeah.
I still say it was the most genius stroke of casting in film history.
I agree, yeah.
Whoever thought of that?
Do you think you could just play yourself...
But then
he
pulled
something
it off.
Evil?
Yeah.
No.
He pulled it off.
Just
brilliant.
Just
he was brilliant.
Just
yeah.
be yourself.
Yeah.
Nowadays, if you had that, they'd be like, "All right, Kevin Spacey," or
yeah, yeah.
The dudes you see in everything, you know. Let's make.
How surprising was it from all these people that are watching Family Feud and he's all just tell him to give him an evasive answer, tell him to go fuck themselves. Oh my God, he was on TV the other day. Same survey says.
Just chain smoking and just talking shit.
If I see him in this
that's
building,
that's good acting.
Thanks, tomorrow,
who said I was acting?
Fired. Yeah,
you're a great conversationalist, Ben. Trifle Limited.
Fuck you. Well, at the hospital, everyone is gathered around Randy, praying for his recovery. He's paralyzed. Again, the cops have not been called. No police report. The guy is near death, and nobody's called the cops. Rip breaks down in tears, and not in a strong, manly way, like. Like in an embarrassing, like when you see a guy, like there's a way to cry and there's this. Yikes. I don't know if he was going for like a
Hey Vince, do you think I'll be up for any like Golden Globes or
Well, you really gotta sell this Randy hospital scene. Oh God, he's just sobby. Really melodramatic stuff.
Here's Vince McMahon's direction. Hulk, imagine that your baby girl is someday dating a black guy. Go.
Oh,
at this point, I'm expecting, because Samantha's in the hospital room with her, I'm expecting her to like get up to get some coffee and never come back. Like,
no, she's just reading her book.
You can't be into a dude seeing him do this.
Joan Severns wanted to get up for some coffee and not come back.
Yeah,
right.
Joan, that's not in the script. No, I'm out of here.
I got Red Shoe Diaries 3 to film. I could be showing my ass for more money than this.
I was in Black Scorpion 1 and 2. That came after this. I don't know. That scene really just jarred me. It's like, I don't care what kind of thermostat you got.
Continue to shoot this, or I can go have dry hop Andrew Stevens for $100,000.
Whatever you've got under that baby blue unitard, it's not good enough to keep her around crying like that. Shit was embarrassing. I was embarrassed for him. But what follows next is a training montage.
Montage.
Where we see Zeus working out in a very highly scientific, calculated, computerized weights.
This is Rocky IV.
Yes, exactly.
He's punching through bricks. Meanwhile, Rip is not trained at all. He's helping Randy learn to walk again.
It would have been funny if they just showed, like, if they showed Zeus and then they just showed the Rocky IV montage. Like, that's not fucking Hulk Hogan. It's Stallone running through the Russian Siberian wilderness.
Tiny just turned into a big white Russian.
It was just cheaper to put. No, they cut out his head and put it on Dolph's body. It was clearly a stab at trying to be Rocky IV, but oh god, yeah. So bad. And again, we see Rip just strictly focused on little brother Randy and trying to get his legs back. The night of the
just bring me a Black Russian.
That's too big. Well, the night of the big fight arrives.
Does he need to train, or does he just spray some? Is that stuff like that deer antler shit? You just spray the coconut oil on yourself, and you're just ready to go.
Vascular. This is the ultimate battle of the tough guys. These guys really are the two toughest guys. We're kind of having our own version of that tonight, don't we? Battle of the drunk guys.
Well,
everybody feeling good?
I'm feeling good.
Could we do our own spinoff, Battle of the Drunk Guys?
I don't see why not.
It's not really a battle.
I'd win.
Oh.
I think it's far too early to tell.
Oh.
Cody, get my deer antler spray.
Let me tell you something, what, Mean Gene? These two drunks have been drinking all day, and they've been doing this thing for 20 years. Mincy just pulled the glasses, Cade's, and that's classic Mincy.
Shut up, JR!
Cade's out. One. Two.
Oh my god, Mean Gene, Cade's doing the Cade slow.
Instead of punching you, I'm just taking other shots. But each one I do, you're like, the audience is behind him! Look, Mincy's doing shots in his face! He is not going down!
I'm gonna drink like an American.
Maybe we'll do Battle of the Drunk Guys at TJ Cigar Lounge in McGregor. I don't want that mess here.
That'll be the last time we're ever invited.
It's the first day they get their liquor license. Oh, today you guys chose Battle of the Drunk Guys. Huh?
Your liquor license has been rescinded. Congratulations, you had it for 4 hours.
Well, on their way up to Rip's dressing room to support him for the big fight, Samantha is once again kidnapped by World Television Network security.
And I love how they had the whole plan where Braille was like, get the elevator ready.
She's kidnapped.
Who are these henchmen? I want you to kidnap a person. Look, I just y'all have really good dental and health.
I'm a temp. Like I literally just got
I need an escape proof limousine. On call thugs in the parking garage. Underground fighting in a steel mill. And security guards with questionable morals. And a phony elevator.
Knock, knock, who is it?
Goons. What do you think this is? The Home Garden Network?
Hired goons.
I hired goons.
Oh. I'm sorry for the hired goons.
What is it? I find that there's a certain touch that you only get with hired goons.
Oh, I nearly spit my beer out on that one.
Hey, he's like Trump. I got the best hired goons.
I got the best hired goons. We're going to be number one.
We're going to have the goons. We're going to have the best goons anywhere.
You want to keep all Muslims out of the country. Yes, but I have a pro-goon policy.
We got the goons. The best goons. Well, she's kidnapped. A federal offense. She's kidnapped. And then they take her to Brell's office. Randy quickly wheels his way up to Rip.
It's a good point. And tells Brell... I don't know if ratings are really your problem anymore. You're facing like 37 felony counts. You're going to go to prison for a long
Randy
time.
Randy wheels into Rip's dressing room and tells him what happened right as the phone rings. And it's Brell on the phone. And he tells Rip, make it last 10 minutes, the fight. Make it look good, but then you go down at 10 minutes.
And again, I'm here.
He has a phone in his hand with the numbers 911 on the dial. Hey, my girlfriend's been kidnapped. I can tell you exactly where she is. Nope. Not going to do that.
But my favorite part is that, again, I'm hearing Richard. Rip, I got a proposition for you.
I got a deal for you.
Got a proposition for you, Rip. 10 minutes. That's all I need. He can go all the way, Rip.
We'll be number one in ratings, Rip.
A World Television News contract.
Rip him. Rip him. Well, that goes in a big part, too, of what I want to talk about, why this didn't work for poor Terry. Arnold came from a sports background, and he brought with that what he lacked in acting chops. The guy took lessons as an actor.
Yeah.
I got none of that from Hulk.
Yeah.
What Arnold brought was charisma and a sense of humor, especially in Running Man. Terry Hulk Hogan is a blank monolith.
Yeah.
He's a 7-foot nothing.
Well, he's charismatic and he's got a presence, but that's all he has, and he couldn't take it to that next level of making you really kind of...
It's the old cliche of guys want to be him, girls want to be with him.
Yeah.
I don't see any of that with Hulk Hogan.
No.
I wouldn't want to be him, and I don't see girls clamoring for him.
But again, this is targeted to 13-year-old males because I wanted to be him. I do remember as 13 years old loving this whole movie. But then again, you know, in my 40s, no, I didn't.
Well, he doesn't call the cops. He listens to his instructions. And Rip immediately, immediately hangs up and calls the police. Of course not. He sends his 90-year-old manager to go find her.
Hey, you're 110 years old. Go get her.
You got 10 minutes to rescue her.
He sends Randy's sidekick friend, the one who got him in trouble.
Yeah, Craig.
You're still hanging around.
Do you know who this is?
The big mouth.
This is Rip's coach.
I thought that was Peter Berg almost the whole movie.
No.
He looks a lot like Peter Berg.
They
got the Joker.
No.
Kind of like that.
They cut to a deleted scene of him and the old man walking in the hallway. What do you guys work here? And the black guy's all, yeah. And he's all, no, you know who we are?
We're Team Rip.
We're Team Rip. Shoot these guys.
Rip, for once would you shut up?
Shut the fuck up. Shut up.
Well, Zeus shows up to the fight wearing a huge pair of bright silver shoulder pads.
Oh my
god.
This
is just,
it looks like Captain Freedom.
That's what I thought. Yeah, it was Captain Freedom.
When he comes out in all that cheap stainless steel. Like,
I was beating guys like this to death 20 years ago.
I don't need this crap.
Go to the Gladiator.
Killing guys like this with my bare hands 10 years ago.
It's just the most cheesy.
Oh.
Again, the costume budget on this must have gone to Hulk's boots and unitard. This thing looked like we put it together.
But at 13 years old, it was awesome.
And I think you're right. This film was strictly made for ages 12 to 13. Nobody else.
What about... Whoa. We're not going 11. 12 or 13?
14? Stick to our demographic.
But they show Rip
watching... Maybe if they were socially...
They show Rip watching Zeus approach, and he looks intimidated, like, oh.
Those shoulder pads. I haven't seen those like since Samantha's at the diner in that blazer. That's really good. I'm a little scared.
I kind of want those now.
I'm going to go stand over in the corner and stare at my giant thermos penis, and it'll help me recover.
If I had that, I'd stare at it a lot. Well... the first few minutes of the fight...
Honey, would you come in here? You're still staring at your thermos penis.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's mesmerizing.
Is it midnight already?
Rip completely gets his ass kicked the first few minutes of this fight. Zeus just... But again, it's not an interesting bout.
No, it's a. This
it's
is one of the most
bunch
boring...
It's headbutts and...
Fist punches.
And
yeah, it's the most
there's
boring.
Nothing interesting about it.
Well, even though, and that's kind of the point, is like the whole time he's getting his ass kicked, he keeps looking at the clock like, oh, God. Oh!
What time is it?
Oh.
I wonder if my 100-year-old trainer I sent up there to solve everything is taking care of it.
At one point, he turned and looked over his brother in the chair, and he's all, Randy.
Wait, what time is it?
Oh.
I think Randy gives him a half-ass. Oh, no, they show Randy.
No, they show, like,
he starts getting movement in his fingers. He's getting his legs back. Well, upstairs.
Well, at least a pinky.
Upstairs, Brell's minions and the security guards are watching the fight on TV monitors, and they're so engrossed in the fight that Sam is able to escape. She's sitting there with them, but they're so into it, she just walks out the door.
Now, here's where I call this. Drawn out where she slowly creeps towards the door while these guys just cheer towards the TV. Yeah! Kick his ass! Go! And she's like, I don't want to move too fast or they'll see me. They're completely staring at the fucking television.
Here's where I call bullshit, and this is the influence of my married life. She leaves her purse.
I didn't notice that.
I was the only one.
So weird.
Thank you for hanging me out there on that limb.
I didn't notice you left your purse.
She did.
Oh, well, that's...
Well, it's kind of Three Stooges comical. She puts the chair back underneath that one security guard as he goes to sit down.
Well, yeah, because he shoves it back and, like, she knocks over a vase, but they're still so into it. They don't hear it.
She could have literally just got up, walked straight to the door, went out. They would have never noticed, but she does this long, I don't want to alert them to my presence.
Well, by the time they catch on, she's gone. She's almost down to ringside.
I've got to go so slow.
And when she's running out of the elevator to get to show Rip that she's okay... Just then, the old-ass trainer and the loudmouth friend show up, and the old-ass trainer grabs a fire extinguisher and knocks
the minions.
The security guys out. The last 20 to 25 minutes of this flick wants so badly to be a Rocky film.
Yeah.
Between Adrian, Samantha.
He
punches out, Zeus punches out the old trainer who kicks him in the face.
It was totally Rocky, like Rocky 3.
When Mr. T knocks out Mickey.
Yeah.
But the wrestling is so lame.
It is terrible.
It's so uninteresting.
How did that old trainer live through that face kick?
Oh, he's exactly. Jumping at him later. But does finally pick up a little when Zeus makes his way into the audience. He makes his way up there, and as Rip chases him, he starts randomly picking up people in the audience.
Throwing them at.
Which, by the way, it's not like a wrestling audience. These people are dressed in, like, fancy nights. Like,
no, they were dressed like the Running Man
like
crowd.
Like gowns and, like, really. He picks up one dude and just, like, throws him at Rip, and everybody's cheering. Well, then
I was expecting him to, like, interview like an old woman. Who would you pick? I pick Ben Richards.
Zeus also beats up Randy in the wheelchair again.
Yeah. Randy somehow, like,
no,
gets
stop
up.
Oh, why did I go there?
I think he's walking past Randy, and Randy and his brains like, Team Rip. He's like,
I expect
you just don't know when to shut your
mouth. Expecting the other guy, do you know who you just kicked? That's Rip's brother.
At that point, Randy pulls out a little gun and shoots his best friend. You're going to get me killed. I can't.
You know who just shot me? Rip's little brother.
God,
he hates your guts.
Shut up.
Do you ever shut up?
This is the only thing that'll work. He starts smashing pies in his face.
Well, Zeus is making... It's kind of like King Kong going up the Empire State Building. Like, Zeus is getting higher and higher up in the stands. He's throwing people. It's just... They end up on this big balcony up at the top. And all this, Brell is in the main control room with all the TVs. And he's going crazy.
What the hell? He starts ripping cords out.
Ripping monitors off the wall.
At first I thought, was he like, is he doing this because he doesn't want people to see it for the ratings? That's why he's pulling cords?
That's what I'm thinking.
Why is he doing that?
No. There was a moment, I think, where Zeus accidentally pulled out the cables that broadcast it. So Brell's like, all this shit's going down, and it's not on TV because they show the monitors.
Okay, now
like,
that I
they
understand.
They show the monitors that says service interruption.
Okay, that actually makes some sense.
Because I missed this on TV. I missed the Zeus pulling that out.
He's pissed because the service has been interrupted. This is all happening and no ratings.
Because I was wondering, I was like, even if you never broadcast another tough guy battle, you've got at least. Be killing the ratings on this.
VHS sales of this fight alone. You know. But no, he's going crazy in there. He's smashing equipment, just sparks everywhere.
Yeah, pulling wires out of the servers, all that stuff.
until eventually, after a billion seemingly headbutts between these two guys, and Rip does his finishing move, the running double sledgehammer.
The double axe hammer.
Where he runs up
and breaks all of his fingers, because you can't do that to another person.
Well, I always thought it was called the double axe handle.
I thought it was the running double sledgehammer.
No,
it's called the running double thermos.
Yeah, Samantha got that.
No,
Rip had to be tired. He had to be tired after this
piece. Rub some more oil on. He's ready to go.
Ripple. Well, he eventually does the running double axe hammer to Zeus's head, sends him flying off the second story balcony down into the middle of the ring, which implodes on his weight, and he's done.
In a perfect circle.
He's toast.
Shoddy contracting work done there.
Exactly.
And he might be dead. They show him down there and his chest.
Everybody's cheering.
So a human being that just fell 30 feet to his death.
Yeah!
Rip him!
Then Randy's buddy comes up. You know who just knocked me down here? This guy's brother.
With his he's about to die, and he hears that, so he reaches up and grabs him.
Well, Rip then turns his attention to Brell, who screams, "Stay away from me, you jockass!" Gets one last jockass in there. As he stumbles backwards into a bundle of open live wires from all the equipment he's been tearing up, and he gets electrocuted to death. I'm assuming to death.
Yeah, definitely, because when he fell, his eyes were open. But what I was laughing at was the crowd. Okay, you just saw a guy get thrown.
They don't know from Adam.
Yeah, you just saw a guy get thrown to his death, and now you just got to see a guy get electrocuted to his death. And what's their reaction? Yeah!
Is that not a comment on the bloodlust of sports
society?
Are
you not entertained?
They should have done a Halloween scene where they look back at the ring and there's that hole there, but no body in it anymore.
Like Michael Myers? Yeah. You think Terry would play it like Loomis? Like, John, do you want me to look like I knew he'd be gone?
He turns to the old manager. He's like, "Did I just fight the boogeyman?" "I think you did, Rip. I think you did." And he turns and looks, and there's nobody there.
You know who hates the boogeyman? Rip's brother, Randy.
God!
Zeus pops up and breaks his neck.
You bring nothing to the table. You really only take things off.
No, he's always hanging out at Rip's house, eating pizza.
Who is this guy? Why does he keep coming in here?
I think his name is Craig.
Yeah.
His only other claim to fame, he's in all the 976 Evil movies. Of which there were numerous.
Two.
Two. There were two.
Well, a sweet 80s rock anthem titled No Holds Barred starts playing. It's performed by a guy named John Joyce, who sounds like every guy who sings these 80s and credits music, but I could not even find this guy on the internet. Like, there's no record of him. He went into hiding after this
witness protection program.
Rip gives us one last straight into the camera.
Rip him. And then the camera freezes
on him doing the Rip sign.
Rip him.
And credits roll. End of movie.
I am a real American. Fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American. Fight for the rights of every man.
Fight for your life.
Fight for your life.
Damn, that just, I'm 13 years old and I'm ready to go.
I'm 13 years old too. I got something for you guys.
But are we in agreement that the Hogan leg drop is the worst finishing move of all time?
It's worse than the Cena five knuckle shuffle.
It's horrible.
It's horrible. I mean, it's a big leg.
Big leg drop.
It's a ham hock dropping on you, but I don't know if it's going to knock a dude out. His leg alone must weigh like 125 pounds.
Not like Craig, who's going to be over there next to you after you just got that fall on you. Do you know what just happened? Randy's brother just fucking hit you with his leg. Oh,
Ripple.
Someone just shoot me, really.
Someone shoot Craig.
Right?
God
yeah,
damn.
I kind of want someone to take out Craig. Well, that's the end of the movie.
Thank God.
I put it in the category of...
It really is a movie that's so terrible, it's fun.
It's so terrible, it's fun, yes, absolutely.
No, it's not.
You didn't have fun?
I had fun tonight talking about it.
But you did not have fun.
But not watching it. It did not hold up. It did not hold up
at all.
Did you have
fun
watching it? I enjoyed it.
It brought back all those memories.
No, it did bring back. Yeah, it did bring back the memories. Once I got through with the nostalgia run, I was like, holy shit, this is really terrible.
It is an awful.
The wrestling's terrible.
It's so awful. It's good.
It's just so bad.
Acting's terrible.
You know,
back before they had a budget for Sharknado, this was it.
Truth.
This was trying to be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this was a situation where they were like, okay, hello, you know what, let's take Hulk and make him into an action star like Arnold.
No, Frogtown's way better than this.
That's my point. Frogtown is way better than this.
Well, Frogtown had a wrestler who could act in Rowdy Roddy. I referred to Hogan earlier as a monolith. He's just a big
thermos cock dude.
A big dude with a thermos cock, and that's all he brings to the party. Which, granted,
that's a lot to bring to the party.
I've been told that's all I bring to the party, and well, minus the thermos cock.
You've never been to okay.
Old Pinto Menti's it at parties.
They don't call me old juice box Kate for nothing. Well. Despite a massive push by WWE head honcho Vince McMahon to incorporate Zeus into WWE leading up to this movie.
Well, one second, before we go into the Zeus and the WWE, how did this movie do at the box office?
Horribly.
Horribly?
Really bad.
Because I remember, I actually do remember being excited about this movie.
Jim Ross, one time during the Monday Night Wars, referred to it, instead of no holds barred, as no profits allowed. I don't think that went over well with Vince.
The Ishtar of wrestling movies.
On an $8 million budget, it made $16 million, which doesn't seem terrible, but yeah. I think they really promoted the shit out of it, which that's additional costs. It was a black eye for
everyone. Like all movies. Oh, it's horrible. It never makes any money. They recouped zero cost, but they were never charged anything for it because it was already a loss.
Yeah, yeah.
So they claimed every loss, so whatever profit they made went straight into their pockets. Like all movies do.
Well, not all movies. Not my movies.
You didn't have their lawyers.
I didn't have those unitards.
No, he had Pinto Menti in those.
Or that other guy. Do you know whose brother this is?
He had Pinto Menti in those movies.
I say, I had plenty of unitards.
Might have been
set.
A common theme there.
Lots of unitards on set.
Wait, I never wore a unitard.
Oh.
I found a loophole. I can call people unitards and it's okay.
Not you. Other people.
Other people.
The emotional pain I'm feeling right now is just unimaginable.
Doctor, do you think it was an accident?
Professor? It's not far too early to tell.
Doctor, would you say that Brell walking back into those electrical wires, you know, sometimes we forget the doctor is not only a participant in the film conversation, but we can tap into his expertise. Brell going into those wires, I know Tuttle said that he was dead based on his eyes were open when he collapsed. Would you say, in your medical opinion, he was dead? Or could we see Brell reemerge in a sequel?
That's a great question, Mr. Cade. And I'd say 1989?
Yeah.
It is no longer far too early to tell.
He was dead.
The pain he must have felt when the electricity surged through his bloodstream is unimaginable. My God! I can't imagine the sort of pain he was in. Speaking of pain, let's talk about Joan Severance. If you've had a thermos-sized cock put inside of you, I can't imagine. Your vagina must be like the Holland Tunnel after that. Good Lord, I can't imagine the pain she was in. Good Lord.
I don't think they ever actually got that far.
Didn't they, Kate? Didn't they?
No, oh, you're, it was wait, a bunch of tickling.
Wait, you're right, they didn't. They just tickled each other.
Sausage fingers tickling.
Tickling.
Never ask the doctor one question. Where he got his PhD.
No, we did once. You.
Yeah, it was like...
You said yes.
Pinkerton, Nantucket.
I think he did say Pinkerton, Nantucket.
You're all wrong. Poughkeepsie Medical College.
Poughkeepsie.
It's a real place, folks. Look it up.
Cody, will you pull up his medical...
I would love to do so, but my phone is dead and...
I slam a pie on top of it.
Oh!
Look it up now. I didn't get that PhD for nothing.
You know who just destroyed your phone? That's my brother.
That's Pinto Menzi. Pinto.
Pinto. Pinto. Pinto.
No, because I remember this time period, and I remember them introducing Zeus, and I'm like, I was just enraptured by Zeus. It's like one of the biggest human beings. That was one of the biggest human beings I've seen, except for Andre the Giant. Why are y'all looking at me like that?
I think enraptured might have been a poor choice of words.
Oh, okay.
Fascinated.
Intrigued.
And did you say under the giant or Andre the Giant?
Under the Giant was a...
He don't wear that tweed for nothing, folks.
That's another film I cast some of you unitards in.
Hey, I gave you my all.
Yes, you did.
And that is also a very gay statement.
You gave it to me. Well, they brought in Zeus into the WWE Universe. And the whole idea was he was going to come in, kind of get familiar with the universe. But then his angle was he was going to be pissed that he lost in the movie.
Yeah.
And was going to be in wrestling for revenge.
Yeah.
Only problem was the guy wasn't a wrestler. They tagged him up with Randy Macho Man as a tag team partner.
Oh, yeah! Zeus, snap into a slim jim!
I think it was Hogan and Beefcake, Bruce the Barber, against Macho Man and Zeus. But the guy couldn't wrestle. Yeah. And then once the movie tanked, Zeus just slowly got fizzled out. And he never went anywhere.
Thank goodness, because he actually had an acting career.
Yeah. But the idea was, for WrestleMania 6 in 1990, that was going to be the main event with Zeus... And Hogan as a rematch from the movie. But how do you do a rematch to a fight nobody saw? And I guess that leads me to the next question. Why, well, we know the answer now. You know, why didn't Hulk, the biggest persona, ever go on to have any kind of acting career? And I think the proof is in the potato. He stinks.
Yeah, he was a horrible actor. Yeah.
He's just absolutely terrible. Terry...
Bowl. Yeah.
Hey.
His name's Terry?
No.
Maybe there'll be Suburban Commando on
another podcast. No, I've had
did any of you guys see
I've had enough of the arrogant bastard, or it took me a while to get that joke. He was Terry Bowl, folks.
Terry Bowl, copyright 2016 Tuesday Night Cigar Club podcast.
Oh. Actually, I did see Suburban Commando, and I liked it.
He's an alien or something?
Was he?
I thought he was like an alien that came down and was protecting some kids.
I thought something it was like just that.
I think he had like the Zeus shoulder pads and like maybe an eye patch or something.
Perhaps this will be worth visiting in the TNCC future.
Oh, wait a second.
Oh, God,
that
I
was,
hope not.
It was Jesse Ventura.
No, it was
Suburban Commando.
No, you're thinking was that,
there is a Jesse Ventura movie where he's like a bounty hunter from space.
Yeah.
That's something else.
Oh. Oh, I just want to see if the guy that played Craig
is... But I guarantee it's better than this.
See if the guy Craig is in it again. Do you know who that is? It's Suburban Commando.
Well, it's got Schwarzenegger's cousin.
Ben?
Yeah.
They're not really cousins. They're just friends.
Well, whatever.
Everybody thinks they're cousins, but they're just friends.
You know Arnold Schwarzenegger? We got his friend.
We got his buddy's Ben.
Do you know whose cousin this is? I'm just his friend. This is Rip's cousin.
He's just terrible. He's just not a good actor.
He's horrible, and as much as that pains me to admit, I mean, he's just not good.
Unlike The Rock, for instance, he's got no sense of humor, no charm. He's just a big lunkhead.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a one-trick pony character. I mean, that's like, even if you go back and you listen to the interviews of, like, Kevin Nash when they brought Hogan into NWO, and they were, you know, they had like their own little.
You know, he was evil because he dyed his mustache black.
Well, no, it was like, you know, NWO was doing this. Kevin Nash and Scott Hall were doing their own thing, and then they brought Hogan into it. And Kevin Nash's main knock on him was that Hogan was still Hogan of 1980s doing the, "Let me tell you what, brother." And he was like, "No, that's not what we were trying to do here."
Yeah,
he just couldn't. He just couldn't act. I mean, even outside of the Hogan character in wrestling, which isn't that tough of a bar for acting skills. Exactly. Yeah. And he couldn't even change character for that.
That's a good point. You know, I think we get a lot of shit, especially at this age when you admit that you watch wrestling. Most people look at you like...
See, this is where I'm glad that I'm from East Texas, because as soon as I'm like, "Oh, you like wrestling?" "Well, I'm from East Texas." "Oh, okay."
It's all your unitard.
You say he's not Shakespeare, but he was in a film called A Midsummer Night's Thermos.
I thought he showed some range in that.
He showed range, all right.
He showed some range. Yeah,
I try to be funny. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
14 inches of range.
Is that how big a child's thermos is?
No.
Oh, can I have an arrogant bastard? And by that I mean don't come sit in my lap.
you got it.
Child's thermos?
It's more the girth that.
I'm thinking of the thermos from my early 80s lunchboxes. Yeah. It's real thick.
But it's only about.
It might only be 6 or 7 inches tall.
But it's.
But it's as thick around as like a.
A coaster.
Yes.
Like this.
Yeah, it's like we like that thick.
For scale.
Like 6 inches, not like terribly long, not like 9, 10 inches long, but that thick.
It is as wide as it is long. It is a cube.
Call that a chode.
Is that what they call?
I read the Urban Dictionary. The doctor likes to stay up to date on medical texts.
That's what we pay you for.
He is professional.
Interesting. I still think, out of all the wrestlers out there,
thank you, sir.
It does seem to be a hard nut to crack, the move from wrestlers to...
When you get to the big screen, you have to be far more subtle, and they're not used to that.
No, they're like theater actors.
Right.
They're projecting to the top row.
Right.
You got to control that.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
I've never seen a John Cena movie. Is he good in his films?
Actually, he is.
He's fairly decent.
Actually,
he is,
yeah.
And I think it is such a hard transition to make. Like we said, theater actors... You're always projecting to the top row.
But Cena, I mean... Like
I think Cena has some wit to him. Because you got to have some personality. You got to have some wit. You got to have...
It's a good analogy,
you
got
to be able to go off script a little bit. And you've got to have some natural...
Some subtleness to you.
Cockiness and some swagger that you can go off book. And I've seen it in Cena. I don't think he's been given the right scripts with these WWE action movies.
No, because that...
Jenny said he was really good in the... What's that Amy Schumer movie? He was in a...
Yeah, because my Jenny was saying the same thing. She was like,
he in
that
train wreck movie with LeBron James?
Yeah. And he was also really funny in the Tina Fey movie Sisters that came out.
Yeah,
I've heard that was really good.
I think he's smart, you know what, enough of these WWE straight-to-video action movies. Let me do some comedy stuff. So, because a big part of his fan base is females.
Yeah.
Just because he's a good-looking dude.
Let me demonstrate some range.
Let me not try to play a Marine when everybody knows I'm not a Marine.
Yeah.
Let me just show up in a use my physique and in a disarming way.
Yeah.
That's how Arnold won over so many people with Twins and Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah, yeah.
Show them what they don't expect to see from you.
Right, right.
And I think he's doing that enough. He's going to get that right action script.
Yeah.
And he's ready for it.
Whereas Rock tried to do that with Tinkerbell.
Tooth Fairy. Same thing. Or was that Big Vin Diesel? No, he did the babysitter.
Yeah, he did
Rock
the babysitter.
Was one of
the pacifier.
Yeah. Babysitter, pacifier, yeah.
I still don't see how that guy's a movie star.
Because people pay to see his movies.
They pay to see his Fast and Furious movies. Nothing else.
No, they paid to see
Riddick.
The first
Last Witch Hunter.
No, not
Last Witch Hunter.
Riddick.
They paid to see the first.
No,
Pitch Black
the Fast and the Furious franchise made so much money.
Yeah,
people wanted to see that crap.
Last Witch Hunter was actually pretty decent.
You would see it.
I want to see.
I haven't seen it,
but I want to see it. I'm not letting y'all flavor. I'm hanging on to Cody.
Well, Cade,
you know who Cody's brother is?
Pinto Mensi. Listen to the man with a PhD.
But he's the only guy right now, being more than a casual wrestling fan. I watch quite a bit when I can. I don't see anyone else. Cena's the only one I could see breaking through.
Well, no, Rock's broke through.
No, I mean the current stable of wrestlers.
Okay, all right, yeah.
No one's talking.
Rock's the biggest box office draw in the world.
No one's talking about Batista.
Batista was great.
He's the only one that will say like he just.
I forgot about Batista. You know what? Between Guardians of the Galaxy, obviously, he also did a couple straight to video action movies that he was like an ex mob guy turned.
Yeah, I remember you talking about. I haven't seen that yet.
He did the subtle stuff really well.
Yeah,
and he was great in the Bond movie.
And I thought that was actually the worst thing because they were building him to be kind of like a Jaws character.
Yeah,
and they did not give him
enough.
Yeah,
he was supposed to be this indestructible guy that couldn't feel pain, and he had a great look, and he really did great with what he had, but it wasn't enough. But he was really good in that last Bond movie.
I mean, I thought, you know...
Enough to where I think he might be back.
Well, no, he is going to be back, because
they didn't show him die.
They didn't show him die. They literally showed him, like, at that scene, like, he woke back up. But they didn't They didn't give you that Jaws film. Like,
is this Spectre?
Spectre. I but I believe, because they're bringing back Blofeld from Spectre, correct. I think we'll see Batista back in a bigger role, I'm hoping.
Yeah,
and I think maybe they were hesitant to go the full Jaws route, which I'm like, you can't
your
do
Bond
that.
Movie, do it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Go all the way.
But who knows?
Odd job, Jaws, make him a memorable... But you haven't had one of those in a Bond film in years.
No.
Yeah,
memorable villain. Yeah.
And
not villain, henchman.
Yeah. He can carry that weight, because even in those few scenes where he was whatever, you know, because he just came out...
And he take the guy's eyes out?
And just, he just did it, and you're like...
Oh, you guys haven't seen Spectre?
That's okay.
I'm so sorry.
No, dude.
Do you know whose brother this is?
Ruble.
I don't do that, man. Go ahead, spill the beans.
No, it's a great movie. Go see it. Especially if you like Skyfall. A lot of people thought it didn't.
I did like Skyfall.
I thought it was a too. Really good follow-up to Skyfall.
Yeah.
Let's end it with this. We haven't done this in a long time. We used to do this a lot on the early shows. And I usually prepared you guys, so I'm putting you on the spot a little bit.
Oh, God.
But I noticed, listening back to some of our old episodes, we did this a lot, and I liked it. Top five wrestlers of all time.
Top five wrestlers of all time.
Top five wrestlers. Not who you think are the top five best wrestlers
of
all time.
Okay, my favorite wrestlers.
Your top five favorites. It's a lot easier.
Okay, I'll go first. Hogan was my favorite. Jake the Snake is my second. Rowdy Roddy. It's my third.
Okay.
Probably Rock, my fourth.
Okay.
And then probably even Stone Cold, my fifth.
Okay. Now, Mincy, I know you were mainly in the 80s.
Yeah, it's all going to be from that era. I like Stone Cold and everything and Rock, but I really didn't watch wrestling past being a kid. So for me, and that was one of the cool things about watching this movie, was it really brought me back to the 80s. And I think I mentioned to you guys that I went and after... I watched it. I YouTubed the Andre the Giant Hulk Hogan fight from 1988.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
So mine are all late 80s guys. So Hulk, in no particular order, Hulk, Randy the Macho Man.
Oh yeah.
Ric Flair.
Woohoo! Woo!
See, I never got.
I love Ric Flair.
Lex Luger. Yeah. Like Lex Luger. Yes.
One of the first
bodybuilding. I was telling Cody, old. Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and that'd be my five. All ladies, guys.
Great answers.
I will say that I want to give an honorable mention to Arn Anderson, because you said Ric Flair. I was a big Four Horsemen fan.
I thought you were going to go Big John Studd.
I just like the name. Honorable mention to Junkyard Dog and Bam Bam Bigelow. But for me, the Hulkster, Randy the Macho Man, Ric Flair, Lex Luger, and the Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
All good.
I'm loving what they're saying. I'm going to shoot off right off the bat, Hogan. Personality, 100%. He embodied everything about wrestling.
Let me tell you something, Cody. That's a great answer, brother.
When he would hold that hand in the air and shake.
The finger
that
point
was
with the swagger.
Tingles up your spine.
Oh, yeah.
But after that, I'm going to deviate. Bret the Hitman Hart.
That's
from that era, man.
Because he came out and he... The fucking pink pants, and he came out and just smashed someone's face.
Yeah.
Love that shit.
Yeah, all
right. I don't know why, but I just love it.
Not bad.
But then, I love the barber, man.
Oh, Brutus
He's
the barber, man.
I was hoping nobody else would say him. I'd look like
God. I love that guy.
Love Brutus.
God, the fucking shit. I don't.
Yeah, he's right up there.
He had that face, man, when he's up in front of that fucking camera with the mic in his face. But
Jake the Snake and him, as far as gimmicks go,
yeah,
hard
great
to beat.
Gimmicks, great.
It's classic. But then I'm going to throw that one out there. Kevin Nash.
All right.
Nash
didn't
get a little love. He was such a big guy, and he came out there, and he had
big
such
sexy.
A presence.
Big sexy,
big sexy.
Yeah.
The guy who's kind of segued into as a supporting role into an acting career.
Yeah, actually, he's
done some stuff.
He played the dad in that.
Was he in the Punisher movie with Thomas?
Yeah,
with
that little sailor.
That little sailor.
He was quote unquote. He called the Russian.
The Russian,
the
yeah.
Russian,
yeah,
in the little Popeye suit.
But I always remember like the behind the scenes stuff on that. That was such a great movie because they were like, "What we need to do?" Because they were trying to work out the scene because he was supposed to pick Thomas Jane up and hold him up, and they were working out this like thing to pick him up. And Nash came and was like, "Well, I can just pick him up because he's like 100."
No, we need to put him in a wire suit.
He's 170 pounds. I can just pick him up.
Did he like, crush a bathtub with him?
Oh yeah, he was throwing that dude around.
He was throwing that dude all around. Yeah.
No wait, Thomas Jane threw a grenade at him, and Nash hit it with a baseball bat.
I need to go back to that movie. That was the Travolta one.
Right? Yeah, Travolta one. It was so bad. It was so bad.
Good. I agree.
Number five.
Number five. Andre the Giant.
Okay, good one.
Love him.
I do want, because of your Nash reference, I have to go an honorable mention also to Scott Hall.
Yeah. Oh. And I would put Hitman.
Scott Hall, or what was his other name? Rico?
Hitman's definitely an honorable mention for me.
Ravishing, or no?
No, it wasn't Ravishing. It was Rico, but Rico it was.
Any of the late Chico. 80s guys.
He always said Chico. Crap. Razor Ramon.
Hmm. I knew it was that.
Yeah.
Rico.
Razor
Chico.
Ramon. Razor
hey. Ramon. If we're going to get an honorable mention,
we have
it's,
to.
It's not a single person. British Bulldogs.
Oh yeah, Davey Boy.
Yeah. This brings back so much because we've all talked about. Three of us have each given five, and we've given some honorable mentions. Let's see what you have to say because so far there's some really good ones that are still left out.
I actually haven't.
Hang on, let's let Kate have his deal, and then we can go.
I actually didn't put a list together ahead of time. I just figured I'd wing it, which because you guys are winging
it. Yeah,
I thought, you know what? I'm gonna put number one, Stone Cold.
Okay.
Yeah,
you don't have to say in any order. Just throw.
Stone Cold, Brutus the Barber. As a kid, that was a close with this next guy who has not been mentioned. Man, never
Gold Dust.
Val Venus.
Oh
no.
Eddie Guerrero,
but very Val Venus-esque. The original Sex Machine. Dude, Ravishing Rick Rude.
Ravishing Rick Rude? Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
The dude had an epic stance.
You know, you paint your opponent's face on the crotch
airbrush
of your tights. Dude, that mustache.
Well, you know.
That porn stash was fucking awesome.
And he was
awesome,
a dominant force.
Yeah.
He wasn't
a
joke.
Yeah.
Like, Hogan feared Ravishing Rick Rude.
All too true.
Yeah, yeah.
One that has not been mentioned, but man, he was a force, and I always just I loved his style in the ring. Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff.
Paul Orndorff,
yes,
yeah, yeah.
I was always a huge Paul Orndorff fan. What's that? Three, four?
That's four.
And then I would. Man, nobody's mentioned Did you mention Macho Man?
No.
Mm-hmm. No.
I mentioned Macho Man.
He mentioned Macho Man.
Yeah. You haven't mentioned Hulk.
I was never a Hulk fan.
Okay,
yeah. I was okay with him, but. I was much more Macho Man fan than Hulk.
Macho Man, Tut, and I both.
But I'm not going to put Macho Man in there. I'd probably over him. I'd go. Man, British Bulldog was a good call.
Oh, I love those eyes.
Oh, see,
come out with the flag. Just
those fucking braids.
And they had the little dog.
And the dog.
You know what? I'm gonna go because I went to one live, big time WWE show. Middle school, Travis Smith, remember him?
Yeah.
His dad took us, and for whatever reason, I went to some of the local shows, like the Von Erichs when they would come through town.
Yeah, yeah.
Local wrestling.
We weren't talking about that, man. Von Erichs, songs.
But we're talking WWE, but he took us to the Frank Irwin Center to see a big-time WWE match. This was before Raw. This was just their Saturday Night Main Event, maybe it was?
Yeah.
But dude, this guy, I always kind of liked when he's on TV because he was so eccentric. But when he came out in person, I'm going to go Coco Beware.
Okay.
The Birdman.
All right.
Okay, you know what's interesting?
That's not bad.
All four of us. Nobody mentioned Ultimate Warrior or The Undertaker.
Oh. Yeah, well, see, I was just thinking about Undertaker because the dude is so
iconic.
You're
immediately shaking your head. Nobody mentioned either one of them.
Well, I was thinking about The Ultimate Warrior, but... He was such a badass. They built him up so much.
He was the Goldberg of the 80s.
He really was.
He was the Goldberg of the 80s. He was a flash in the pan, a gimmick.
I'm real surprised
that
I thought
he is in the Hall of Fame, but...
Yeah. I'm real surprised that no one...
Rightfully so.
I'm real surprised that I said Luger and Hacksaw. Nobody went... It shows you the breadth and the depth of the personalities they had back in the day.
No, Luger was... nothing, I loved there was Luger. Nobody like Luger, man. He was also a champion bodybuilder.
Yeah.
I mean, which also, I don't know if you know, Cena started out in bodybuilding. Yeah. He was an amateur bodybuilder. Like, but Luger brought the, I mean, not to the extent of like Scott Steiner with the big pop of pump. But the guy was not a good wrestler.
Yeah.
No. But he was just a freak physique-wise. And I think you got to separate the...
Chemically.
You got to separate the gimmicks that are just there, the Rybacks, or whatever his name is.
Scotty Too Hotty.
Hey, Scotty brought it, man.
Can I adjust my list?
Scotty brought it, man.
Scotty Too Hotty.
But then, you know, you're also overlooking all the great tag teams over the years.
I can't believe how much I'm mentioning.
Some of those tag teams, like the Hardy Boys, the shit they would do off those ladders.
Oh, the Hardy Boys were just
Edge and Christian.
Edge and Christian, man. The Concerto.
We're naming... We could literally sit here all night and name dozens of amazing...
And I'm not a wrestling fan. Mine just goes back so far, and I'm still remembering all these dudes.
Yeah. I know you were a big Tugboat fan.
He was more of an Avalanche fan.
Hillbilly Jim!
I love Hillbilly Jim.
Well, that was from the age of Hogan where there was just nothing but clotheslines and kicks.
Yeah. And splash. I remember when...
Big John Studd literally hit you with a board.
Jimmy Superfly Snuka?
Sam Houston grad.
Okay.
I think. I was always told
that. He was there a semester.
I was always told that. I'm not sure about that. It's... People look at a square when we're sitting outside the pub. And
the Iron Sheik?
We start talking.
Iron Sheik.
Man.
He and Sergeant Slaughter.
But I do remember, like, one of my first matches.
It hates Muslims.
Do you know who else hates Muslims? Randy,
right over here. Randy.
No, I do.
Pinto Mincy?
I do remember Hogan's matches versus Iron Sheik. That was like my first venture into wrestling.
You know who's a great one? And we won't. We'll cut this. We don't want to bore our non wrestling fans.
But they're already bored.
Dude,
they shut this off an hour ago.
Big Boss Man.
Oh, Big Boss Man. Oh, yeah.
So hey, many good ones. Can we get a toast here?
To Big Boss Man?
To Miss Elizabeth?
Hey, can we do a retroactive Buddha remembrance?
let's just toast Miss Elizabeth.
Miss Elizabeth. The first lady of wrestling.
Ooh, yeah.
Rimmel. Dutch Thermos has fallen over.
But, dude, as a kid, was there anybody more ideal beauty and...
No, Miss Elizabeth was it,
Miss Elizabeth was just the definition of perfection. She was sweet. She was supportive of her man. When she left Randy...
Randy
tweeted her like crap.
When Hogan and Randy were fighting together, and Elizabeth got hit by a flying chair, and Hogan went to pick her up and carry her away, and so Randy then got the crap kicked out of him.
He knows his stuff, and this is honestly the truth. It was the side characters.
I didn't have a girlfriend when I was an adolescent.
I grew up with you, and I never knew you even having any interest in wrestling whatsoever. So you're impressing me.
But in the late 80s, I was home on Saturday nights.
All those side characters within that, Miss Elizabeth and the announcers and everybody,
can we do one more real quick?
Jimmy wore those dollar store sunglasses.
Like the most ridiculous wrestler that had no business, unathletic. At no point would this guy be a formidable foe for anybody.
Eddie Guerrero?
You really don't like Eddie?
Really? Wow.
He hates Eddie.
You're throwing some shade on Eddie.
Randy. This guy. No, Cody Guerrero.
I just say that because I'm thinking back of all these wrestlers, and there was a couple of those guys that had no athletic ability.
The Brooklyn Brawler?
Honky Tonk Man.
Honky Tonk Man?
This fat slob with big pork chop sideburns.
But he was like a guitar.
DiBiase was a piece of shit.
What was so funny is that Honky Tonk Man was considered an enforcer. He was considered heat.
Well, you know what?
But he was also like a formidable foe for Hogan. Like, oh god, here comes Honky.
Well, I don't know. I'm going. I'm sorry, listeners. I am just going so nerd on you.
Professor.
If you watch the Triple H documentary.
where Triple H was, you know, he's like this badass, which I love Triple H, but he was talking when he first came out, was starting to get big. Vince wanted to team him up with the Honky Tonk Man for heat, to be the enforcer, to be the muscle to Triple H, which I find is ridiculous. And so Triple H was like, no, give me China, the big bodybuilding chick.
Who could break Honky Tonk Man in half.
Exactly.
Everybody loves China.
That's a movie, actually.
Actually, it was.
Speaking of sex tapes. All right, well, that's enough. Thank you for indulging us in our trip down memory lane.
Sorry, listeners.
I hate to say this. We are going to revisit the WWE in a future episode.
Oh, I want to do a couple because I'm...
They just released a trailer for a new movie.
Uh-oh.
It's like Die Hard at a WWE event. Oh, it looks so terrible.
Terrible. So terribly awesome.
Terribly
Hulk tying a fire hose. Oh, Hulk. Oh, Terry, what the fuck are you doing?
No, I will say I've seen the trailer. I've seen the trailer, and Kane looks just absolutely horribly uncomfortable.
Oh, everyone looks very uncomfortable.
I just read this recently. Undertaker. Longest personality in the business.
Dude's been around
now. I'm
forever.
Just picturing a diehard
50 years old.
Yes.
Now I'm just picturing a diehard movie with late 80s wrestlers. Wait. Jimmy Hart, the Alan Rickman role.
Undertaker's longer than
I got
than
the
suit of
the Chess King. I like it. I got two of myself.
Pink jacket with anchors. Flair's been around since the 70s.
No.
Who?
Flair.
Undertaker has been in the business longer than anybody else.
Huh.
He's 87 years old.
Yeah,
87 years old.
Because Flair's been around. Latecomer too.
Yeah,
but again, listeners, we're done talking about.
Okay, sorry. I'm so sorry.
Hey, we got a lot.
I'm sorry you weren't as awesomely into our knowledge of. Do you know whose brother this is?
We all agree that guy should have gotten killed within the first time.
Yeah, Zeus should have, like, tomahawk chopped.
Braille should have just cut this guy's throat.
What does anyone think about me starting a wrestling career under the name of The Doctor?
I think it would be very short-lived. Agreed. You'd be more of a manager personnel.
Yeah, no, The Doctor would be
awesome manager.
Standing back there with my lab coat on and my reflector mask on, like Jimmy Hart.
Yeah. Just
sitting at the announcer table, all the pain he must be feeling is unimaginable.
I can't tell you, Mean Gene, the pain he's going to be feeling right now is just unimaginable.
Do you think your client's worthy of the heavyweight belt?
Oh, Mean Gene, it's far too early to tell.
That's not the confidence.
Shut up, JR!
Thank you for joining the Tuesday Night Cigar Club podcast.
As always.
Hey. I always say it. We did our jobs. You want to learn... If you want to learn, if you want a No Holds Barred, look at No Holds Barred. You got it.
And check out the new blog that will be starting on pintomenzi.com next week.
Give us some links, Tut.
Go to our Facebook page, Tuesday Night Cigar Club. Go to our Twitter, TNCC_cast. Hit us up on, Twitter's TNCCcast. The Instagram account is TNCC_cast. We're everywhere.
Rock it out on FritzBeerMusic.com, always.
Man, he's been keeping us good company tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to... I need to go buy Spotsy Tavern songs.
We were just talking about on the break.
Yes.
You guys asked me to send you the song illegally, and I said no.
No,
I didn't say that. I asked.
No, we did not. Fritz, don't listen
to
that.
You asked if it was available on the website, and I said... Oh, well, if you've been listening to the last 30 episodes.
I bought a Fritz Beer Crown Vic CD, and it was delivered with autographs by Fritz and all the band.
Oh, hell yeah!
Although Fritz and I have a personal history,
he does that for everybody. go buy the damn CD.
Much like my Hogan worship, it's been shattered tonight.
She's Got Demon CD.
Yeah, but the one Fritz sent me was his real autograph and not the stamp print.
No, it was...
He does that for everybody.
Especially his charity.
Hold those chairs in!
Fritz's Kids.
Hold them in!
Fritz's Kids.
Fritz's Kids.
Music for Fritz's Kids. Battle of the Music Guys.
Yeah, tonight was fun. There's going to be probably a little lag, longer than usual, between this and the next show.
Yeah, why?
One of us has some things happening that's going to take a little hiatus, not a long one.
But I'm not worried about it because, honestly, as my attorney has said, the evidence is circumstantial. So, folks, the doctor will be back soon. It's just a tiny hiatus.
Let's go with that.
Do you know whose brother this is?
I think somebody here is going to welcome a new family member into the world, but really what we're talking about is me here, but it's a bullshit charge. I pulled out of here worryingly.
Let's go
it's
with
fine.
Your court cases. Let's go with that. But... In the meantime, there will be a lot of stuff on the website, and we'll be back in action before you know it. I guess, why not? Season 4 will be coming up.
Hell yeah.
This is our last episode of Season 3. And guess what? I got word we are renewed for another season.
I don't even remember Season 2.
It was very brief. It was like 3 episodes. I can make our seasons whatever I want.
There was a writer strike.
We have writers?
I want to meet them.
Well, nothing with us. There was a writer's strike. We kept working. Because we work. What about the American people?
We got the best writers.
I am
we got the best writers.
We'll be number one in writing.
We're not going to end this one like we did. But no, thanks for joining us. But seriously, go to iTunes. Leave us a review. That's what I want. I want to see more action on iTunes. Thank you for joining us. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for everybody for subscribing to the YouTube channel. I dig that. Yeah, I'm
getting some cool with that.
Hell yeah.
Maybe one day you'll put some new clips up there.
Yeah, maybe.
Don't hold your breath.
Do you know whose brother he is?
No!
No, come back next time. And until then, may the wings of liberty never lose a feather. Sign on, motherfuckers.
To learn more about the time I experienced an embarrassing wardrobe malfunction when my purple wrestling unitard split in half, revealing my naked butt cheeks to a gaggle of shocked and horrified Target shoppers, check out your local news next week. That's right, folks. It hasn't happened yet. So consider this a warning. I've got the purple unitard right here. And when Keith, the Dutch Oven Howell, walks into Target and, quote-unquote, drops his keys, it's showtime, baby. You smell what the Keith is cooking. Yeah, you smell it? Smell that Dutch Oven? Oh, yeah. Smell it, baby. Feel that? Yeah, you feel that, Hulk? Right in the 24-inch pythons? And in the meantime, to learn more about the cigars and libations enjoyed on tonight's episode, you can visit www.famous-smoke.com, www.lagloriacubana.com, and www.stonebrewing.com. And for the Tuesday Night Cigar Club, I'd like to say, please, smoke and drink as though you're wearing tie-dyed tights. And if you must watch Hulk Hogan movies, do so responsibly. For more on O'Brien's Irish Pub, the live music leader in Central Texas, please visit O'BriensTemple.com and download their free smartphone app, where you'll find full beer listings including over 40 on tap, menu information, and a calendar of upcoming live events. To listen and purchase music heard on tonight's program, check out www.fritzbeermusic.com. Thank you for listening to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club podcast. This is Keith A. Howell saying until next time, friends, unless we see you sooner at the pub. So keep it smoky, and for God's sake, keep it ballsy as well.